Gregoire and Dan Beeston are smart enough to know better.
Welcome to Smart Enough to Know Better, a podcast of science, comedy, and ignorance. I'm not who you were expecting. My name is Carrington Vanston, and in this special 10th birthday episode, I'll be talking to Gregoire and Dan Beeston as we discuss the show, its history, some highlights and special memories, and finally, hopefully, come to terms with their crimes against podcasting. Greg, Dan, explain yourselves.
Hello. It's, what happened here? I come to do my podcast and there's some Canadian person. What the heck is this about?
Hello, Carrington. It's so good to have you on the show, or for you to have us on the show.
Yes, for me to have you on your show. Yes. Welcome to your show.
Look, I'm just going to get out. I do find this super indulgent and I'm loving every moment of it. I wish I had a piece of chocolate or a cake or something to enjoy whilst I was eating this. Sit back and discuss the many splendors of our 10 years.
Is that you telling me that I should have brought you cake?
I think everyone should bring me cake at all times.
See, okay, that's going to be like a rule of thumb. Got it. Okay.
Look, I don't know whether we should be sharing food from people in North America at the moment.
No, you should not. Okay, so this is, as we say, your show. Last 10 years, I can't believe it's been 10 years, but you've done over 200 episodes, not that you would know from your bizarro numbering scheme.
Yeah. For all of us making fun of people in the Americas with their bizarre ways of measuring stuff, we can't even count to 200 probably. Right.
First episode, number one. Second episode, 1.5.
Yeah. And that's how we intend. And there's like this 0.75s, this 0.2s. It's all over the place. It's great.
I think of them as entire episode-long tangents, which is kind of in keeping with the theme of the show, to be honest. But you guys have done hundreds of hours of recording. You've interviewed tons of people. You've covered topics from rebooting the universe to testicle transplants. You've even named the sun and the moon. Oh, the hubris of this show. A full decade later, you're still going as strong as ever. I want to talk about how you do that, how you keep the energy up. Hopefully today we can bring all this to an end.
This is an intervention character. Is that what this is?
Very much. You know, you are loved. This is a safe space, but you have to stop.
He's going through every single pair of cis white men on the planet and saying, you need to stop your podcast.
That's right.
I'm just doing them in alphabetical order. I'm up to the bees. Greg, you just came along for the ride. Dan, we're starting with you. Okay. Beeston.
There was a joke on the internet with the whole lockdown thing and people saying, don't start a podcast. Whatever you do, don't start a podcast. And there was backlash to that and all those. But I sat there kind of looking like the little meme monkey that was kind of side-eyeing everyone. And I was like, yep. Hey, you two white dudes, don't start podcasts. And I was like, yeah, I won't start a podcast. I was doing it before all of you. Well, not all of you, but many of you anyway. So, damn it.
Technically, you weren't doing it before me. I'm just saying.
Well, I was going to say that, Carrington, one of the reasons I do podcasts is because I used to listen to your podcast.
Oh, so, hey, this is not my fault. No, you're not putting the blame for your show on me, man. So that's not how that works.
You were a voice I used to listen to.
There's a backhanded compliment.
As in before I started podcasting.
And before Carrington's podcast became real targeted, listeners.
Yes.
Real targeted. Do you like the Apple II from the 1980s?
Yeah, that's amazing.
The entire 1980s, please.
he's not a generalist.
Who has the time? I do want to talk about the origins of the show. And in fact, I'd like us to begin really a discussion because I don't know how the show came about. I've been listening since the beginning, but I don't know what came before the beginning, back when you guys weren't you guys yet. Like, presumably you knew each other before the first episode of this show. In fact, we have some questions from listeners, and listener Michael was asking, like, how does Dan remember meeting Greg and how does Greg remember meeting Dan? So I'm interested in that. So why don't we take it in that order? Dan, tell me about your meet cute with Greg. How did you guys first know each other?
Like, I must have met Greg when I was doing improv. I'd started doing theater sports at a little cafe called the Hub Cafe, where like these shitty little shows would happen. And Greg must have been an audience member there to the extent where I kind of recognized him. But my first solid memory is of going to an improv workshop that followed the beginner's workshop and of seeing him running desperately to catch a bus and going, hey, that's that guy who's just like a faceless goon from the crowd. Oh, he must be doing the workshops. Oh, I'm going to have to keep my eye on him because now he's a person of interest.
I have to learn his name.
So that's how you met the person you later knew as Faceless Greg Wall. And so, Greg, is that your recollection?
Dan was someone I improvised with. So, yeah, when I was learning to improvise, I got dragged into impro because I very stupidly was judging everyone on stage and roundly. I lived in a share house at that point with improvisers and was like, that was rubbish and that show was rubbish. So I'd gained contact knowledge, as all audience members do. And it wasn't even the improvisers who got annoyed with me. It was the improviser's girlfriend who was like, one day she went, oh, shut up. You need to shut up. You either do the bloody thing or you shut up about it. Like, you don't get to judge them unless you do it. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do it. I'm too much of a coward. And then she enrolled me without my permission. And I was like, I'll give it a go. And then here we are. And that's where I met Dan. But I do remember seeing Dan on stage, yeah, back in the day.
Well, that's interesting then. So you guys are doing impro. How do you get from there to science podcast? Did you always have an interest in science? Like, okay, first of all, why a podcast then? Why would you guys, why the heck did you start this monster?
Well, I actually started an impro podcast 3 years prior to Smart Enough to Know Better. Like, I love listening to a podcast called Geeks On. And I'd listen to your Monster Feet variety show. And I started doing a podcast called And Time, where I would just interview my friends from impro and we'd talk about impro, and we had maybe 30 listeners. I actually stole little bits and pieces from Monster Feet to put into And Time, which is the
gasp.
Bit in Monster Feet, after the podcast had ended, you would put in the little bits of the behind the scenes that you found funny. And I stuck that in after And Time, where the stuff that didn't really fit. And that's actually carried over to Smart Enough to Know Better.
Mm.
And he's a very popular part of the show, I believe.
You both keep trying to blame me for any of your show, and I'm not standing for it. I am not standing.
Legally, you can't pin anything on me.
Yeah. Why do you think we asked you to interview us? Because
it's not our intervention, Carrington.
Oh, I see. Okay, so Dan, you had some previous podcast experience. Greg, how about you?
No, not really. We not at that point, actually. That came later, the podcast that led to it. So Dan and I were working on, I'm trying to remember the timeline now. It's like linear time's really hard sometimes, but so
where in the Jeremy Bear-me was the
that's it. Dan and I worked together on different impro shows, and basically we enjoyed working together, and we sort of said, well, let's work on something else. Let's work on something that we want to work on, and what would that be? And we had no idea. And it was really like, I don't know, let's just work on something together. Let's just throw it to the universe and see what happens. Because Dan had been doing And Time, Dan put forward the idea of doing a podcast. We didn't even have a concept of the subject wasn't even like, let's do a science podcast. And because I am a bit of a sciencey, geeky guy, I mean, so is Dan, I went, well, let's do a sciencey, geeky podcasty thing. And Smart Enough kind of evolved out of that. So it was literally, let's work together. Dan says, I can do podcasts because he'd had experience doing it. And then let's do a sciencey thing. And ta-da!
Who came up with the name?
I built a blog as a sort of a side project. I want to decorate it nicely and sort of design a blog without actually writing anything. I actually named the blog Smart Enough to Know Better, which is a mildly common phrase. Although now when you type it into the internet, our podcast comes pretty close to the job.
Thank you very much.
But it was such a nice name. I was like, oh, I kind of want to use that for something.
I claim the science, comedy, and ignorance bit. I remember sending Dan a message about that, saying that the tagline for it was science, comedy, and ignorance. And just I was sitting in the lounge. It's such a strong memory, sitting in the lounge, and suddenly just a podcast of science, comedy, and ignorance. I texted Dan and went, oh my goodness! And Dan was like, yes! And so suddenly we had the whole ginormous, ridiculous name that we could sort of inflict on people.
Okay, so you've got your podcast, you got your name, you got your impro skills, you decided to start this show. One of the things that I found really remarkable about your show, I've been listening since the very, very beginning, but I went back and listened to a lot of early episodes again.
Oh, gosh.
And it's amazing. No, okay, yeah. First episode, the audio wasn't, like, you had audio quirks, like a lot of startup shows do. But
the thing is, I'd already been doing podcasting for 3 years.
I tried to throw you an excuse there, guy.
I shouldn't have had those audio quirks. But Greg was like, oh, I bought a brand new microphone. It's a USB mic. I'm like, oh, okay, so we'll plug your USB mic in and we'll plug my USB mic in against my better judgment.
Highlander style.
And the computer did assume that was what was going on because the clock speeds of both mics were slightly out of sync. And then it just ruined all of my audio. And I had to sit there and re-record all of my reactions throughout that episode.
I did not know that. That's so amazing.
It would listen there and there would be like this Davros, the sinkhole thing. And then I'd have to stop it and then splice in, oh, so that's interesting about sinkholes. And then put that in. It was the worst editing experience of my life.
It will be amazing to go back and listen to that show now, knowing that your stuff is later, and see how good is your acting. Like, did you sound like you're just reacting in the moment as you redo your own lines?
Oh yeah, that's so where my skill is. It's not the technical excellent stuff. That's
his best impro skills come from reading scripts.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so audio snafu aside, mm-hmm. you guys did have the essential format of this show down from episode one, which is pretty remarkable. Like, having done hundreds of episodes now, like I said, like nobody actually knows how many episodes because the numbers are all over the place. It's amazing that it came out so fully formed. Did you have a lot of discussions ahead of time about how this is going to be structured and what you're going to do? Like, you guys had the idea of getting, you asked in the very first episode for people to email you responses and tell you where you got things wrong. Like, you basically invited the walk of shame from the first episode, which is a huge part of it. I mean, there's so many things that are iconic to this show. And it's amazing to me that it started in the first episode. How much of was that worked out ahead of time and how much of it just came naturally?
I think there's quite a lot of organic ideas that sort of popped up. All we prepared for that first one is, okay, you bring a couple of science stories and I'll bring a couple of science stories and I guess we'll just talk about them. And I'm like, well, if it's going to be a bunch of stories, then we should have a little break in the middle. And because we did a lot of comedy show stuff and we had friends who wrote sketches, we were like, oh, I guess this is our opportunity to write sketches. And I'm like, oh, well, let's put a sketch in between the segments and then it sort of breaks things up. But I don't know how much we thought about that and how much it was just like, oh, that sounds like fun. Let's give that a go.
It wasn't, I don't remember lots of big, long conversations. It also comes down to how Dan and I think after doing it for 10 years with Dan. Dan does the podcast differently to how I look at the podcast. There's a tension, not in a negative way, but an energy between us. We're not the same person. And so that comes through almost from day one as well. And how he deals with the, Dan seems to like to do more hands-on or home science stuff or hey, I thought about a thing and then I went and answered that question myself, or I'm much more, I'm going to Google scholar the hell out of it. And that's just, and there's just two different ways of coming at it. And with, I think that's come even from day one, that sort of came in there as well.
Actually, I think initially for the first couple of episodes, we were bringing stories that interested us. We came with the same story once. I was like, I've come about this story. And he's like, oh, I've got that story. And I'm like, well, that's no good. Like,
we should have notes.
We should probably be exciting each other and surprising each other, because that's a bit more interesting than us just rehashing the same stories to each other. Mm-hmm. So I found that I was noticing things that were happening in my life or things were striking me and going, oh, I don't know the answer to that. I'm going to find the answer to that. Whereas Greg will tend to go through all of the current science and go, oh, this is new. This is exciting. And it means that we're covering two very different bases and we're more likely to surprise each other.
That's true. Yeah, that's a very good point.
Because I don't keep up to date with popular science at all.
I had to stop listening to, which I didn't mind. It really was a good thing. I stopped listening to science podcasts. Anything that was very similar, that became similar to SE2KB, then I stopped listening to, only because I didn't want to rehash other people's work. And also I realized I was listening to my own tribe and learning nothing new. And I went, oh, this is boring. And I branched out into economics and into politics and a really wider range of things I'd never thought of before. And years later now, I love different sorts of podcasts. And I find that they've informed me a lot. That's how I get a lot of my disparate information from now, from gardening to economics to whatever. But I don't listen to science podcasts because I've kind of got that covered in a very egotistical way.
Sure. I see that. So did you guys have particular goals for the show? Did you set up things like, we want to do so many episodes, or we want to achieve a certain thing? Whatever. Hit me with your goals. Great.
Yes. One goal, which was, if you're going to do a podcast, I can't remember where this came from. Dan, you may have brought this to the table, but it was, if you're going to do a podcast, you have to do it for a year. You can't stop 2 or 3 months in. Most podcasts die within the year. And that's because you're not going to make $1 million. You're not going to have 1 million people listening. You've got to do it for a year. And after a year, reconsider whether you're going to stop or not. And I was like, that was my goal, to get 1 year down, to keep going for at least a year and see what it looked like at that year point.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, really? Okay, that was such a thing for me.
The only rule that I remember was, don't miss one. Mm-hmm. Like, our goal was to release on the third Sunday of every month, and we never hit that anymore, but we never miss a month. Like, we dedicated that. Mm.
And you guys have been remarkably consistent for a decade. Like, there hasn't been massive chunks where you've just vanished.
I think once we released a day after the last month ended, but we caught up. So we have released an episode every single time we promised to release an episode, including when we were doing 2 a month. For a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. When I moved to Perth, because I used to live in the same city as Dan on the east coast of Australia, and now I live on the west coast of Australia, like 1/10 of the way around the planet, and we put quite a few in the bank because we knew that we'd have difficulties me getting access to the internet and all my equipment. And so we actually recorded ahead of time so that we could just drop them in. And holidays as well, like Dan's gone on holidays or I've gone on holidays, and we've recorded extra content for when we're away. So we try to stay on top of these things as much as possible.
We had a couple of specials when I went on a really big trip once.
Mm-hmm.
So I still meant I had to edit 2 more podcasts together.
Yeah.
And I'm going to want to talk about that later. I'm going to want to talk about like kind of how the show is done. But for now, I want to get to the science, because people listen to your show for the science and the comedy and the ignorance. It's probably because it's right there in the tagline. Science is the first part of that. It's the thing that Thomas Dolby was blinded with, and you have a question from, I think I mentioned this, the listeners had asked you a bunch of questions, so I want to pepper in when you're least expecting them. and so now that you're expecting it, listener Steve, he asked about how you guys got interested in science to start with. But Greg, I want to start with you on this, because at one time, I think you were a librarian, right? And then you made the switch to science communication. So what prompted that change, and did it happen before the podcast started or afterward?
Oh my goodness, that's a good question. No, but the podcast came after. I've always been interested in science, but I've always been, I guess, in The Simpsons many years ago, Lisa Simpson was horrified to discover someone said, oh, you're a generalist. And she was like, oh my God, I'm a generalist. It was such an insult. And I remember at the time going, oh, because I'm a generalist. Like that was sort of my thing of, I have a wide range, maybe probably an inch deep, but a wide range of interests and knowledges. And I like understanding how things work. When I was in high school, many years ago, I remember doing physics and doing chemistry. I did all the STEM subjects. And I remember in grade 12 learning something in chemistry, and suddenly realizing that was just what I was learning in physics. And it was all one subject at that point. And I remember going, oh my goodness, these two bits of the jigsaw all fit together. And I was super excited by this concept. And I went, oh, and that was the first linking of, well, there's no such thing as one subject. Even though I joke about physics being the only science, it's not really. The more you learn in lots of different areas, the more you can slot it together into one big fabric of human knowledge. I really, really enjoy that.
It's almost like it's true.
Well, that's right. Yes.
Crazy.
I know. If you go and do a PhD, you focus down on, not that I have, but if you focus down on one area, then that's great, but it really limits you to what you're really great at. That's the whole different thing. So I was a generalist. It took me a long time to work out what I wanted to do. And so I fell into library work because the universe just dragged me along.
You were sentenced to it?
Yes.
You were a librarian by court order.
I was a librarian because a friend of mine, I was unemployed at the time, and a friend of mine who was unemployed went, I'm going to go do this test. It was a council test, like a how dumb are you test, and should you where you should be working. And I went, oh, I'll come, that'll be fun. To blow my own horn, I aced this test, and I was given a library job. And so I worked in libraries. It was that simple. And I became discontent with that. But what I discovered when working in libraries was I didn't enjoy putting the books away. As I said, it's like doing a very low impact workout. You know, lots of reps, a small weight, thousands of times up on the shelves. So I got library muscles, which is great.
An unsatisfying jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Everyone kept messing around.
Every piece is an edge piece. Yeah.
And I started teaching people about computers. Back in the day, I was like, hey, there's a thing called Google. It's very exciting. You should have learned to use it. And old people are like, what's that?
Google's a fad.
Everyone used Yahoo. It really was. I enjoyed teaching that sort of stuff. And that's when I went, wait, I think I enjoy being a teacher. And that's when I decided to go and get my teaching degree. From there, I did my teaching degree in science. And then I went and did my master's in astrophysics. So it's always been, what do I want to do? What do I want to do? And even though I'm 45 now, I always forget that I'm 45. So I kind of go, I'm still in my 20s somewhere until I look in a mirror and I go, whoa! I got melted. But I forget that I'm not like a Tolkien elf. I don't have 800 years, you know, infinite number of years. And so,
oh, you don't keep a painting of yourself in the attic? Because
that's Dan, no. What Dan is.
Yes, I'm never aging. I'm always the same.
Well, Dan's actually much closer to what he used to look like than I am. So maybe I'm Dan's painting.
Oh, yeah, that makes more sense. Like
slowly getting older.
That's right, yeah. I don't have this drive. I don't have this. A lot of people go, oh my God, I've got to have a degree by 21. And I've got to be rich by 25. And I've got to have a Ferrari. And I've got 42 children by the time I'm 42. And everyone's got this. And I'm like, just slow down. But of course, my thing is, well, I forget that you're not infinitely. I am going to live forever. That is my goal. But
yeah, you said you were a practicing immortal.
I'm a practicing immortal. So, but sometimes I forget that I may not pull that off. And so I things suddenly pass me by and I'm like, oh, well, but yeah, that's my thing. So I enjoy science. I enjoy teaching it. I found out what I really enjoyed doing in astrophysics. And yeah, that's all informed the podcast somewhere along the line. But the podcast has been a big part of that, as in giving me access to people and impetus and confidence that I wouldn't have probably had.
And I don't know whether you decided to do your master's before the podcast either.
No, I didn't. I've always been interested in astrophysics from a very early age. That's from the age of, I remember being 1986, Halley's Comet came around. I was a very small lad. That sort of started my love of science. But no, I remember working for CSIRO, the federal science organization here in Australia, a part of the education and outreach group. And a guy there was like, hey, you know, if you're into astrophysics, why don't you study it? And I was like, what do you mean? And he was just like, well, you could just go study it. And it was funny. The thing I want to tell the listeners,
it hadn't occurred to you that that's a thing you could do?
No, I know this is super important. Absolutely not. This is super, super important. Maybe I'm just dumb, but I don't have any higher education people. My generation and my family are the first people to get higher education. So any sort of degree and any sort of higher degree, even beyond your basic undergraduate degree. And I didn't know too many people around me at that time that had them. Later on, I do. And I have a lot of friends now who have them. But at the time, no, I didn't. And when you're not surrounded by it, you don't see it. And it's super important to the listeners to hear that, because I was aware that you get, you know, there was like Doctor Who and there was Dr. Carl and there was all these people, but you just thought they were doctors. I didn't know what they thought. I didn't know. I just wasn't aware. It never impinged that that could be me. And that sounds really dumb as a cis white male, but you know, like, you know, you can be anything, but I really didn't realize what it was. And so it took for someone to go, why don't, like the place I worked said, well, we'll support you. If you want to go do this, we'll give you time off to do exams. We'll give you time away. Like you can study this. It makes you more valuable to us. And I was like, oh my God, this is a thing. But yeah, of course it's a thing. Work is not just here to grind you into the dust. Like you are working for an organization that wants to make you better so that you become better for us, so we can grind you into a finer dust. And we can get more
the finest more value of from dusts. It. The most valuable of dusts.
That's right. Instead of just carbon dust, it's diamond dust. So
grade A,
no,
Gregoire. Baker's grade.
If you know that it's out there. So, and also I had this terrible fear that I was too old and I didn't do it when I was 18. I didn't go to university at 18. Then there's no point. All the PhD students are 24, 25. They were young up and comers. No, you can go back later in life and learn. And you may not be like the hot new surgeon or the top astrophysicist, but you can go do it.
You'll probably learn a lot faster and have a much easier time because you're not hungover all the time.
Oh my God, mature age students, anyone listening? Oh my God, when I went to university, the first time I went to university when I was a young man, like the first time, it was super hard. I couldn't get my head around it. I just didn't know how to do anything. I couldn't wake myself up in the morning. I was pointless, like totally doing computer science, totally pointless. When I went back as a mature age student, laughably easy. I would do, I mean, I did the work, don't get me wrong, but I did my teaching degree and aced it, like absolutely straight sevens, pretty much sevens and sixes, the top marks anyway, just weird flex, and with very little work. And then did my astrophysics and did some work. I mean, I did lose, I put time aside, nights aside and weekends aside, and absolutely stonkered that as well. And went, oh, as an adult, education is easy because it's designed to teach rowdy children, even though that they're adults in inverted commas. It's, oh my goodness, go do higher education. It's stupidly easy because everything gets spoon-fed to you. Everything's like, now do this, do that, make sure you have this done by Wednesday. And you're like, oh, I don't have to think about any timetabling. As long as I do what they say, I will do well. You'll pass anyway. It's so, go do it now. Stop listening to the podcast. Go do it now.
And go get a degree. Then come back.
Then come back.
This will be much easier.
That's right. Yes.
Okay, so
what was the question again? Sorry.
It's about science, and I want to ask Dan about science now. So, Dan, a similar question for you. Can you spell science?
No.
More seriously. Okay, so 2009, so before this show starts, you were making webcomics.
Yep.
You were, according to the internet, a costumed storyteller in Brisbane ghost tours, whatever that is.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So how does a comedian, costume wearing online doodler get involved in the science podcast racket? Like, where's your science drive come from?
Well, when I was a kid here in Australia, we had this TV show called The Curiosity Show with
which you can find on YouTube right now. It's they put them all on for free on YouTube.
That'll be in our show notes. And it's for American listeners, it's similar to what I understand Bill Nye the Science Guy is. It's fun science experiments for kids. And so I had that enthusiasm for just learning about the natural world around me and understanding basic physics, basic chemistry. You know, you watch documentaries by David Attenborough with your family and you love them. You find them really interesting. And as long as that interest and that curiosity is built inside you, it's very easy to maintain that enthusiasm for just new information. That's all it was, is just an interest in the subject. And every time I would read a bit about it, I go, oh, that's quite interesting. I like adding that to my knowledge. And so, yeah, well, I would have arguments with Greg. Because Greg was like, no, I'm Mr. Science. I'm learning a science degree. And that means I know.
I'm so science, they call me Mr.
So we would have these arguments at parties because I'd read some article in a magazine that he hadn't read. And I'd be like, well, it's just like this. He's like, that's ridiculous. And then I'd show him the article. He's like, God damn it. I'm like, well,
science keeps moving on.
If we'd recorded this, everyone would know that I was right and Greg was wrong about the thing. How can I make that happen next time?
That's actually true. Who said that? Someone did tell us that. So that wasn't our idea, was it, Dan? That was, I forgot that party thing. Someone, one of our friends said that you should record this. We had an argument in a party, not an argument. We had a heated conversation during a party when everyone else was having fun and drinking alcohol and enjoying themselves. And Dan and I are in the corner nutting out this in-depth philosophical / scientific principle.
Do you remember what we were arguing about?
No.
There is a type of goose in the north of Canada and the same goose in the north of Russia, but they don't migrate all the way across. They have, like, it's almost like if you had 10 groups of geese between Russia and Canada, and the ones in Russia can breed with the couple near Russia, and the ones in Canada can breed with the couple near Canada, and the ones in the middle can breed with the ones either side of them. And so, but the ones in Russia and the ones in Canada can't breed with each other. So it's like this lovely demonstration of how evolution works, but it works across distance rather than across time. The way that I was presenting that information, Greg was like, you're out of your mind. That's not how it works. And so he wasn't able to explain to me why I was not explaining it to him right, I think.
Yeah. And also, I now know a lot more because of podcasts about that sort of stuff. Also, I used to think biology was garbage. So, and I wasn't. And basically, I was talking from a point of ignorance. I'll absolutely admit that now, that my very limited knowledge. Now I understand a lot more about geographical separation of species and that sort of stuff. You can have time and migrations, all sorts of cool things. Yeah, but we argued that point pretty hard. And people found it funny that we were finding it so, that we'd rather argue at this point than enjoy the party around us.
We were invested.
We were a bickering old couple, basically, and people found it hilarious. So
you were rehearsing the show, is what you were doing. You just didn't know it.
Exactly. Yes.
In addition to discussing science and discussing science points, obviously you've done interviews, like countless interviews. By countless, I mean I couldn't be bothered to count them, but it's probably a big number. So do any of the interviews or subjects stand out as particular highlights or exciting gets? Like when you think back over the 10 years, were there any that you were amazingly excited about or were just like you're thrilled to have done?
I've changed over time with the interviews. To begin with, I wanted to get famous people. I remember thinking that quite clearly. I want to get names, especially podcasting names, people I listened to. Because I was excited to talk to them because it was a way of talking to these people I've been listening to, like George Shrab and Emily Lakdawalla and a few others as well.
Skip
Brian Dunning. We got Brian Dunning on the podcast. And because these people I listened to back then, I was like, oh my God, it was like talking to a famous person for some level of famous. And that's how I kind of did it back then. But what I discovered very quickly, talking to inverted commas famous people wasn't what actually excited me. They were fun and interesting, and I enjoyed talking to them, and I wouldn't, you know, don't want to change that.
It made us feel valid.
It did, yes. But what I discovered was talking to people who were excited by this science, and they were just scientists in building. They were just a scientist. And especially later on, we changed to like to trying to platform female scientists. And you're just saying, hey, are you a scientist who I want to know about vaccines? And so the surfing scientist went, was that surfing scientist? No, that was the rock scientist.
The rock
guy.
And roll scientist.
Rock and roll scientist. And he was about vaccines.
Casper?
Yes. That's, I think that's right. Oh, walk of shame ourselves. And so it was because he was passionate, and that's when, oh, that was much more fun to talk to someone who's super passionate about this science that no one knows. They're just toiling away in a building somewhere. They're not the sexiest scientists in the world. They're not the biggest scientists in the world, but they love their little niche thing. And suddenly I was much more interested in what they were doing because they were excited. Like Dr. Raven with his spiders. And so he's like, oh my God, I've got spiders. Like, oh my God, he's got spiders. And it was just exciting. I can't remember the name. The gentleman who's designing wooden skyscrapers. These are, you know, or cooking aliens. Like all these kind of weird things we've done over time. Because they're passionate, I become interested in it. And therefore, I think the audience becomes interested in it.
I have a different tack on the interviews. I like the interviews even when they're not passionate. It's like, oh, finally I could talk to someone who's got their feet on the ground and ask them really ridiculous questions they've never been asked before. And there is something really satisfying about being able to get a performance out of someone who's not used to doing that and to make them realize this stuff that you do and you take for granted, it's amazing and everyone wants to know about it. And I'm super excited about all these things that you think are just normal and boring. And what you're doing is so good. And it's nice to turn that into a package where a bunch of other people are like, oh my God, I never knew that boring rocks in space could be so not boring.
Yes. It's really fun. The big part of it, that's where the ignorance comes into it for science, comedy, and ignorance, I guess. It's the fact that we're not experts in the areas a lot of the time, and we're not there to show that we're experts. We're there to go, we will ask the dumb questions because that's how you learn things. And if we look a bit silly, then that's fine. And we can learn, we can all learn together at that point. And
a huge part of science is about accepting when you don't know stuff, because that's how you learn stuff.
Yes.
If you don't do that, it's religion.
Yeah.
Well, the reality is for both of you, like you have this incredibly infectious enthusiasm and passion every time you're doing an interview, every time you're discussing things. And that's why the rest of us listen. I think you draw it out of people, and that's what makes the show amazing. But also, I think the point you just made about the fact that it's science, comedy, and ignorance is a big thing that separates this from what could be something that's a little less enjoyable, because you guys approach it saying, I don't know this. This person knows it. Tell me. I'm excited to learn. I'm excited to take in the knowledge. And you bring the listeners along with that. But why was it important then, or is it important, that you guys included the walk of shame, like to call out specifically when you get things wrong? So there's ignorance. To say, I'm starting off saying, I don't know this. Teach me. But then when you guys make mistakes, you really call it out. And that's something I don't see in any other show. And you did it, like I said at the top of this show, you did it from episode one. So why do you feel that it's important to call out your own mistakes and to focus on this, you know, level of ignorance in a sense?
Recently, I listened to a podcast that started doing something very similar. I'm not saying they got it, they definitely didn't, but it's the only one I know, where they specifically at the end of the podcast say, in the last podcast, the producer said X, Y, and Z, but that's been corrected now, and like flat out correct themselves, like a correction moment. I went, that's so rare. Sometimes they do retractions. Other people go, hey, I said this weird thing last time. That wasn't true, but it's super, super rare. Like I've not heard too many podcasts that flat out go back and connect to an old podcast and say that was wrong. So I feel quite proud of that.
I remember a story about this guy who'd worked for, he's a scientist, he'd worked for like 10 years or something on this thing, and he'd done some sort of symposium and kept, this was his barrow that he kept pushing. And then another scientist did their thing and went, this is why this guy is wrong. Here is the proof that this guy is wrong. And the story was that that scientist was in the audience and came up and he like shook his hand or hugged him and went, thank you so much. Because he helped complete his work. And I was like, that's what real science is. It's not about proving that you're winning. It's about everyone working together to get closer to this ridiculous notion of truth that humans are so enamored with. And if we're going to do a science podcast, then we should embrace the best thing about science, which is we're probably wrong, but we're a little bit righter than we were last month.
Oh, and things can change. And things can change. Things can, like, as in what we say in 1 year, the science can change later on. Or we got it wrong. But I mean, science can say, well, it's totally wrong now. This is how we look at it now.
And that's not a failing of science. Like, that's its best bit.
That's how
people are like, oh, scientists, they keep changing their mind. Last week we weren't supposed to wear masks. Now we are supposed to wear masks.
Just wear the mask when they tell you to. Fact.
Just listen to the scientists.
The other thing about the ignorance part, we've said it quite a few times, we're not a political podcast, though we do stray. Importantly, we're not a skeptics podcast. And
although you were nominated for a Skeptic Podcast Award.
Twice.
You're not a skeptic podcast, but we are good nomination.
Absolutely not, because we look the same. We're two white dudes talking about science, and they went, obviously, you're like every other two white dudes talking about science. You must be a skeptics podcast. And they're a good skeptics podcast, but I always felt skeptics, and I'm assuming Dan does as well, but I don't speak for Dan particularly, that they were sneering at people. They're very sneery. They're very, like, they can be. Once again, broad brush strokes here. They can be very sneery. This dumb person said a dumb thing. Aren't they dumb? Let's point and laugh at them. And so there was us versus them. And Dan said something very, very clever. One of the cleverest things I've heard him say, and in fact, anyone say for a long time, and that was to drag someone kicking and screaming to science, you've got to stop them kicking and screaming. And I really like that. It's always stuck with me, because if you're going to go, ha ha, you're dumb because you believe in magic, then they're not going to listen to you. They're never going to listen to you. If you say, hey, I'm cool looking at this cool thing over here. Do you want to come over from that thing you're doing? Come look at my cool thing. And they're like, yeah, I do want to look at your cool thing. And then suddenly you've got a connection with them. And that's why we're not a skeptics podcast.
Yeah, and we had to learn that while we were making it too. Because in the first couple of years, we would have these segments where we were making fun of Perspex pyramids that helped you become a better person. Or I think Craig actually called me up one night. He said, we've got to do an emergency episode of the podcast. There's this magic bracelet that the sports people are wearing. And so we've got to talk about that.
Yes, so, I was all very, very riled up. That was a 0.3, I think, at one point.
Like, yeah, and there was, I think at one point I had a segment where I was like, okay, so if you've got to pray towards Mecca in order for it to work, and you're on the complete antipode to Mecca, then which direction? We would explore and pick apart religion a little bit and have a little bit of fun at its expense. And we stopped doing that a lot. I mean, we did turn the blood and flesh of Jesus into a lovely biscuits and gravy, which I was very proud of. But most of the time, our mindset is, get people excited about stuff, show people the wonderful stuff about science, and you don't need to point out the dumb stuff about stuff that isn't science.
It's got to a point, I wouldn't say the high point of the podcast, it definitely wasn't, but started being invited onto other people's skeptics podcasts, and I had a bit of a road to Damascus, ironically, moment where I was on someone else's podcast and I recorded with them and they were, everyone was bagging things. And then at the end of the podcast, I felt really bad during the whole podcast. I felt very negative about how people were talking. And I got off the podcast and I was listening. I was thinking about it all night. And the next day I wrote the podcast a big letter saying, hi, I'm happy to use what I said, but I'm unhappy with what was said here, 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 and here. And I thought that was kind of offensive. And you're picking on these people for these reasons. And I wrote a little, like a treatise, basically, like pages and pages of, you know, why do you feel you need to do this? And I sent it to them and I got told, hey, that's great. Thanks. You know, appreciate your impact. But I realized I was writing it for myself. It was me explaining in my own head why I found this hour and a half of sneering quite objectionable. And I'd obviously changed somewhere in my mind. It was quite a few years into the podcast. It was probably 4 years into the podcast. And so that moment on, I was very much, no, let's not do that. I don't want to be that guy anymore.
And I've stopped thinking about things in that way too. I realize I try to bring kindness to every single decision that I make. And that even extends to like trying to give the benefit of the doubt whenever the media tells me to be absolutely terrified of something. It's like, oh, wait, well, so what does that mean?
Being kind is a useful thing for me as well. Maybe it's just reaching middle age, but I don't care if someone's clever. I don't really care. It's nice if they're clever and you know that they're rich. It's the people I enjoy having around me now are the people who are kind. And a failing in myself, I go, I'm not kind enough, and I try and be kinder and fail. You know, I'm not. I haven't like, oh, I'm now become this amazing person.
That's because you're an idiot, Greg.
There's that Australian kindness.
No, sorry. Can I retract that? I'll edit that out.
And so Dan and I have sort of reached interesting moments. And maybe it's just middle age. Who knows? But yeah, the concept of being...
Yeah, because the older people get, the kinder they get.
Well, that's
something I see all the time.
Yeah. All those kind boomers. There we go. So be kinder. I spent a lot of my youth being clever and nasty, I think, and realizing that I could use my intellect to tear strips off people, and I was good at it. I could worm my way into someone and tear them to pieces kind of effortlessly, like to be perfectly shittily nasty. I could be a real prick about it. I mean, and that's, you have to be honest about it when you know, that was a young man who was obviously scared of something in himself. I was good at it. Like I could size you up and then take you down from the knees. And people go, I don't care. And they go, yeah, you do. I can see it.
I gotcha. Tell.
They're like, I'm not hurt at all. As their heart's like, I'm going to survive this. And you're like, and at the time I was like, winning. But what do you win? Like, and now I'm like, you know what?
The internet.
Well, yeah. And this is kind of pre-internet, actually. Early internet. Thank God I learned that lesson early. Thank God. And it's taken me a while, but now I kind of go, you know what shows you really strong in this world or really powerful? It's not destroying people. It takes very little effort to hit someone and break them or steal all their stuff. What actually requires strength is helping someone and keeping yourself above water. A truly strong person is someone who's like in the water who can hold up someone else, not someone who pushes them under to survive. And that's how I think about life. If I want to prove that I am smarter than you and better, then I'm going to do that by lifting everyone up like Superman around me, because that proves I am amazing. It's kindness maybe through proving I'm better.
This is actually a big improv thing. There's a way of doing improv where you try to be the funniest person on stage, but there is a better way of doing improv where you are able to make everyone else on stage look good. Mm. And that's a real power.
Yeah. And this is what science communication is to me now, my job. I am not the scientist. I am not a research astrophysicist. I work for an astrophysics organization, and my job is to make their amazing research look, get it out there so you can see it. That's my job. It's not my research. It never will be. But I'm like, bring me your research, and I will trumpet it to everyone and explain to everyone and why it's interesting and bring an enthusiasm and love for it to everyone. And that's a different skill I think I've learned over time. And the podcast has been very helpful for that.
So do you do this for you or for the listeners then? Like, is the goal for SE2KB that it helps you learn or that it helps you teach?
The thing that the podcast does for me is everything else in my life is like indulgent time wasting. I play video games and I used to like perform on stage, or I do like little drawings for myself, but I'm not sort of bettering humanity. I haven't become a doctor. I'm not doing anything that makes humanity better, except for the podcast, where the skills that I've developed, I can use to create enthusiasm in people who may do their own amazing things because of what we've told them.
You also don't have children. So sometimes people reach a certain age and then breed. and then say, well, all my mistakes, I'm going to make sure the next generation's better. And that's what they say. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
That's their thing of, well, I balls everything up.
That's just kicking the can down further down the road.
Yeah. I think humans have this urge to try and create something, to have some impact or some on someone somewhere. That's, you know, maybe you have to produce them yourself from your very loins, or
I made a thing. It's a person.
Yeah. I made a thing. That's right. Now I'm not going to screw it up. You're going to screw it up, by the way.
Now they can account for my failings.
Yes, that's right. For my take on it, I don't see a difference between teaching and learning. As a teacher, I have learned more as a teacher than I ever learned at university or in life, as in the subject areas. Because when you have to explain something to someone in a classroom, especially children, you have to know it. And I'd be teaching something on the board and then go, oh, and then the student's like, oh, Mr. Wah has just learned something. As in, my students would obviously go, oh God, he's excited again. Like, and I'd go on a tangent. Oh my goodness, look at this formula here. I just realized that part was here and that part. And they go, oh great. We just want to learn the formula so we can regurgitate it for an exam. So teaching and learning is very similar to me. And so the podcast, when I find something interesting and I learn about it, and someone else learns about it, but now I know about it too. So we can have that conversation later on. So teaching and learning, I think, are the same.
And I've got so much information in my head from the podcast because I've had to really learn it to explain it. And so I'm popular at parties. If you want some some science fact, and people don't at parties generally, I'll force it on you anyway.
Doing an impro show, I got a reputation for correcting science on stage to the point where an audience member was like, "Shut up, Greg. We don't care about you. Shut up." No, I am. I am going to tell you this thing that we got wrong because you need to learn. Like, this is, we're here for the yuck yucks. That's all we want. We want a gynecologist with a spatula in the toilet. That's all we want.
Coming up on Smart Enough to Know Better, the next interview. Okay, surprise question from the audience. Richard and his son Anton from the Curiosity of a Child podcast had a great question, I thought. What is the biggest change in science you've seen during the time of SE2KP? Like a discovery, some understanding, a change of perspective. What would you guys say? Like, what stands out? It's 10 years you guys have been talking about science. It's got to be the greatest hits here. What do you think is the biggest change in science?
For me,
you believe in homeopathy.
In my own area, exoplanets, when we started doing the podcast, we didn't know there were planets around other stars. Now there's like 4,000 of them out there that we know of. That's impressive. Gravitational waves is another big one. So not using light waves at all, electromagnetism at all, as in seeing the ripples in space-time is kind of cool. I was trying to think other exciting ones that we've actually not sort of – CRISPR came up recently. The gene editing is kind of huge. That's a big one. But the one I think also is we've talked about is climate change. The, you know, that's sort of, I mean, it's been around, they've known about it since 1880 or 1870 kind of thing of, you know, maybe we put carbon in the air, it's going to screw everything up. You know, people wrote this in newspapers at the time. But I think in the last 10 years, it's become bigger and more out there and people talking about it and arguing about it still. But that's the other big one for me.
And for me personally, 10 years ago, scientists would be like, well, actually, baking is chemistry. Oh, isn't that a fun tidbit fact? But then now it's like there are molecular gastronomers out there who are like, yeah. I've used the very forces of the universe to create this cake made out of pellets. Or a foam made out of a cow. Or glued these 7 different types of meat together. And Kenji Lopez-Alt from Serious Eats is always doing these wonderful write-ups about not just how to make a recipe, but why every single part of the recipe works and does what it does. And when you learn about this stuff, it's so much more thrilling and you get such a better concept of how you can use these techniques to do your own cooking. And you go, oh, actually, this works in here because it's an acid. Because lemon juice is acidic and you can replace that with something else that's acidic and you will get that and this would happen and this would cook. And yeah, I think that's just incredible.
I have to mention also dino feathers because in the last 10 years,
I was going to bring it up, of course.
This is supposed to be a celebration. God damn it.
We have destroyed dinosaurs for Dan over the last 10 years.
Not just for Dan, for many of us. For me, for instance.
And so not just feathered dinosaurs. That's okay, we've known about that for a while. But more recently, brightly colored. Like, they can now look at the colors of feathers of dinosaurs.
So you're ruining everything with your science and your facts. I didn't want to know.
Beautiful blue feathered dinosaurs and different colored dinosaurs. It's amazing because those cells leave impressions. And so we had to go over to galloping alligators for Dan. Yeah, these giant crocodilians. I shouldn't say alligators. Crocodilians from the past that can gallop across land to get you. So that's one of the podcasts that we've changed, that we've seen, of course. I'm sorry, Dan. Poor Dan. God. I just don't know how much the listeners enjoy sending. Anytime it ever comes up about feathers and dinosaurs, I get many, many, many people emailing me going, oh, my Dan's God. Buttons. They even say, this is going to really annoy Dan. Well, Dan's going to be upset by this. They know what they're doing. You know what you're doing.
Yeah, they'll find that article and they go, who can I share this with? Well, I think we know.
And that's kind of fun. I love the fact, because that's not an area that I know much about at all, as in it's not my area at all. The fact how quickly that's changing, and we're talking to Dr. Caitlin Syme, the taphonomist, and how these bits of dinosaurs and animals are being saved over time, how much we're learning about them, is, I think, that's mind-blowing to me. That's the fact we can look at the fossil record and learn not just it had bones, that it had skin and feathers and types of skin and even organs sometimes, wings. You realize how unlikely it was. It's amazing.
So speaking of audiences writing in to push Dan's buttons, because we all like to do that, you guys have an interesting, it feels like a rapport with your audience where they write in a lot. You guys do not seem to be podcasting in a vacuum. Your 100th episode you did as a live show with a studio audience, basically. So tell me a bit about that experience. Like, how did that come about? How did you do one of these podcasts in front of a bunch of people?
We'd been performing in front of people for years and years before that, doing impro. And so I guess it felt like a sort of a natural extension. Although we had a new format where we were getting audience members to tell us stuff.
Also, the funny thing about that was I remember sending on a whim an email to the science minister of Queensland. I just went, I'm going to send an email to this lady and see, you know, hey, come along. Come on down. Come be a little show. And heard nothing back because, you know, it's a government. They got stuff to do. And then suddenly I got this email from some random staffer going, hi, the minister wants to come. The minister will need this here and this there, and you need to meet the minister here, and then they'll, like, how many hours will it be, and what we want all the questions beforehand. And suddenly it became real serious. So we had she was amazing, actually. She was
Leanne Enoch,
thank you. Yes,
she's still in the position.
Yes, she is. Yes, she's still the Queensland Science Minister. And
you did ruin her career.
No. She was really fun. And we had our friend Spencer Housen, who was Brisbane's radio show king for a long time. We knew him. So he came along and added some level of credibility. And
yeah, we can't thank Spencer enough, actually. He's been such a big supporter of us all the way along.
Yes, absolutely. And well, he'd invite us in. You're doing a podcast and they'd say, we need someone to talk about science. Oh, we'll get those two guys who talk on a podcast. And so he would get us in. And people are like, who are you? So suddenly we're on like the afternoon or morning breakfast or afternoon radio talking about science with people in our own weird way. I don't know how
successful it was. Was that also how you guys, for a while, I think during an election, you were doing sketches for that?
Yes.
Right?
Was
that
yes.
Yes. Yeah, we were doing sketches. That we were approached by Spencer to write political sketches, which is not our area at all, and I don't know how well they went down.
We got invited back for a second season.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
But yeah, three sketches into the second season, they'd played one and went, yeah, it's just not working this time, guys.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, oh, well.
So I guess it's the whole thing of being a small fish in a medium-sized pond like Brisbane. And if you know a few people and you've worked in the artsy areas and you talked to a few people suddenly and you have contacts, that's how you get things done. It's people you know. And we're just lucky enough to have known amazing people who don't hate us. So,
envy you.
and if you lived in a massive city, so if you lived in hundreds of millions of people kind of city, or at least tens of millions of people, then I guess you can get lost in the crowd pretty quickly. And where Brisbane has 2 million people and most of them aren't working in this area, we got lucky. I mean, you have to admit we got lucky. And that's why we live in the splendor that we all live in now.
Well, we also got a lot of support from John Birmingham, who wrote The Guide with a Falafel in His Hand. And so he had a robust online audience who he pointed them in our direction. Half of them were like, we're going to stay.
Yeah, that's true. And John's gone on to write, he's Australia's super author, John Birmingham, and he's gone on to write lots of, what would you call them, like
airport thrillers.
He very cleverly went, I'm not going to write, in inverted commas, I don't think he's speaking of writing literature, whatever that means. He's going to write things people want to read and pick up and buy. And so sellable, like war and stuff, blowing people up. And his great power and his great weakness, I think also, is he said once that he will just kill a character off by rolling a dice. I don't know how true this is, but it's a lovely idea that he would write a story and then he would say, I got to throw some level of chaos into it, like real life. So suddenly you've got a character who's like almost like the lead or the second in command, and then they just get shot in the head and die. And you're like, what? But they had a story. They're going to fall in love with this person. And no, they're dead now. And then he'd write, how am I going to write my way out of this problem? And I went, that's a really interesting idea. And it does make these kind of sudden, whoop, like everything shifts and it feels like life. So I quite enjoy his work.
My favorite character from the World War 2.1 books died between novels. I started the third book and it was like she was recovering from the death of Dan's favorite character. It's like, you mother!
I laugh at what are they called? It's the Wave series of books, but I don't know what the first... After America. That's the one. And After America is this idea, this something happens and everyone on the continental US that has a spine turns into a puddle of goo. And that's all of Canada, sorry, Carrington, and all of the US and quite a bit of Mexico, I think, also kind of gets turned into goo. And you don't know why. And I've also asked him privately and he won't tell me what the MacGuffin is that wiped everyone out. But he said there's a reason. It's not just magic. And so what happens in the power vacuum on planet Earth in the 90s, I believe, or the early 2000s, when suddenly the juggernaut that is the United States vanishes from the planet and to After America, except of course all the people, all the Americans who are in the Middle East who are now suddenly, you know, sans government but with lots of boats and guns and a feeling of we're on our own. And why I love it, I love the story at the time, and he wrote it really well, of people trying to go into the continental US and take it over, and do you have the right to it anymore? But also now, without getting too political, I'm like, oh, look what happens when America pulls out from the world. People say, I want America to pull out from the world, and then they do, and everyone's like, oh my god, they pulled out from the world.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Smart Enough to Read Better, a book review podcast.
Well, it's the John Birmingham fluffing hour. John, we want residuals. Thank you.
Okay, but he is an iconic Australian author, and yours is not just a podcast about comedy, science, and ignorance. It's an Australian podcast about comedy, science, and ignorance. I can tell because of your accents.
You don't have accents. You have an accent.
And I can tell because you don't have my accent.
What are you talking about?
First of all, it's a boat. Learn to speak Canadian.
A boat?
A boat. None of us say a boot. We say a boat. Like, a boat. As if it's like a ship. A boat. Oh, you want to really sound like a Canadian? Say a boat.
No, I don't want to really sound like a Canadian. I want to sound like a cartoon character, but an American pretending to sound like a Canadian.
Then a boot it is.
Hey!
Anyway, the question is, how has the fact that SE2KB is an Australian podcast informed the show? Like, how is it different because you're Australian versus something else? Science is universal. Science is everywhere. That's supposed to be the point of science. But you guys are distinctly an Australian voice. How do you think that's affected your podcast?
Scheduling is a f***ing nightmare.
Yes, it's a pain. Yeah, everyone lives on the wrong side of the planet. The ridiculous northern hemisphere, the worst hemisphere.
The best hemisphere.
No, you can't back that up.
I cannot back that up.
Our interview with George Crabbe started at 1 a.m.
Yeah.
I remember. Yeah. So we've gotten better at that since then.
We have. Especially now I live in Perth, it makes it even more difficult.
Some great scientists in Queensland, Southeast Queensland, though. We've had so many on-site interviews with spider specialists and taxonomists and heart doctors and stuff. And
Dr. Amy Cunningham, oh my goodness, was about heart transplants. That was one of my favorite. Now I think about it.
I feel just like, amazing. I feel like one in every three stories about amazing advances in science comes from UQ in the University of Queensland sometimes. And that, that's probably my bias.
Yeah, we focus. That's because we focus on those things because we have to. We don't have the opportunity. Well, we do now, but we didn't have the opportunity to go talk to these amazing people. Neil deGrasse Tyson or whatever. Like, they're too famous, too big. And
okay, because that was
talk
my question, because it always seemed like you had quite a few Australian voices, and I wasn't sure if that was about trying to promote Australian science, give like Australian representation, because you've been very good and it seems intentional about branching out. Well, you are two straight white dudes just talking in a podcast.
Straight-ish.
Well, you're white. I'll give you that. You're too white.
And I'm super straight, so it sort of evens out.
No, but you've had a lot of different voices. You bring on a lot of female scientists, and is it intentional? Are you trying to give a broader representation than typical podcasts? Because you certainly seem to achieve that.
Absolutely. There was a definite moment when I realized it was one of our listeners that got in contact with me, and she said, good Lord, there's a lot of dudes. Lots of dudes. and it was that moment when things were changing where it was just learning, and that's fine. And I went, oh yeah, there's a lot of dudes. And I thought I wanted to bring more women on board. And I chatted to Dan, and we're like, if I want to talk about spiders, bad example because we found a dude. But if I want to learn about a subject, there are women who are doing just as well as the men, and no one wants to talk to them. And strangely enough, they're really excited to talk to you. And it's just a matter of contacting them, going, hey, do you want to talk to us? And they're like, yep, love to. And it's not putting pressure on women. Sometimes I get told you can't make women, you know, be the representation of their gender. And like, that's fine. So I email them and say, hey, do you want to be on this? And sometimes they say, no, I'm good, thanks. We've had people who've been in the past who have said to me, hey, I can't come on now. I I'm doing other things, but here's another person. And they're a dude. And I'm like, yeah, sure. And I don't go, it must be a woman. It's like, no, I do my best. And our ratio is now somewhere between 25 and 33% somewhere. I haven't checked the numbers recently. But yeah, we try and get more women on. I pick more women than I would pick men if I could.
I tend to be hesitant that sort of touches on the politics and stuff. And I want the podcast to be a little bit removed from the outrage culture. So I tend to be a little bit hesitant about that sort of stuff. But at the same time, it's wonderful from a technical point of view to have different voices. And that really excites me to have. It's not just that it's a woman and they're being oppressed. It's this is a person who's had a very different experience. And so we're going to get this lovely salad of different perspectives on subjects. So, yeah.
For me, it's not about oppression. Just to come in there, Dan. It's not. I think it's important. It's normalization. It's absolutely normalization. And it's not. I'm not trying to be woke or virtue signaling or whatever the stupid terms that people yell at you about. It's women are scientists and women can be scientists, and so therefore I go find a woman because they're there. I work with them. They're there, and they, you know, and that's what it is for me. Why not talk to a woman? There are women who can do what I do as a science communicator as well as I can do, probably better, but definitely as well as I can do it. So I'm just going to use a woman as much as I'm going to use a man, unless there is specifically I want to talk about this one thing that this one man has discovered recently. Then I will talk to that guy. But a lot of the time it's general. Let's talk about taphonomy. So, oh look, great, we've got a taphonomist and she's a woman. Great, that's fantastic. Normalization is important.
I'm interested in how the show is made. We've talked about the interviews and your structure and all that, but some people might not know like what goes into making a podcast. You've been doing it for 10 years. Has the way you've produced the podcast changed over that time? And how do you do it now? Who picks who's going to get interviewed? How do you reach out? Who does the editing? Is there editing? How long does it take to do a show? I'm interested in all these things. Yeah, it was a subtle dig at you guys. No, I'm kidding. But really, like walk us through a little bit. I would be interested to know, like behind the scenes, how does this actually go from you guys are just chatting, have an idea, to produce show getting pushed out?
Well, we know the information that's expected of us each episode. We're gonna ask each other what we did this week in science, and we don't need to have something, but it's always nice to have something. Generally we do have something, and we probably want to have probably three or four segments talked about. And so I always try to have two segments ready to go, and Greg tends to collect news stories. Is that right, Greg?
Yep, yeah, I think so.
You read through a lot of science articles.
Yeah. I go through, and a lot of the time it's trying to find something that's interesting, because a lot of it's very similar that we've talked about before. You know, more planets discovered, or more of this, or more of that, or this rounding error has been reduced from 99.99 to 99.9999. Like, great, who cares? Einstein proven right again. Blah blah blah. So it can be hard to find something interesting and new. But yeah, always try and find something interesting.
When we started, I was always being struck by, oh, that what can I do there? Oh, what's that? Oh, what's that all about? How does that work? Now I sort of know about how everything in my house works, and every part. I think I've done almost every part of the human body at this point, and so it's actually getting a little bit harder. Or I'm starting to have to do the subjects where I'm like, oh, I know that this is really complex, but I'm gonna have to do it because I can't think of anything else. We're gonna talk about the atmosphere of the Earth. God,
and
damn it.
Nothing's funny for me than Dan trying to read complicated chemical equations. That's pretty funny.
And so we also collect Walk of Shames. Mm-hmm. So this is where usually we rely on the audience to send stuff in, and they are great at that. Mm-hmm. And then because
you give them so many opportunities, though, so
especially me,
they're spoiled for choice.
I am very much. I would say it would be more than 2/3 me, probably even 3/4 me, and then 1/4 Dan. So I also get everything wrong all the time.
I've learned to be much more careful about what I say. I couch everything in.
Yes, on average,
what I heard.
Maybe, yes.
But the other reason, of course, is that I edit the podcast, and so I go through it. I listen really carefully again, and I hear the mistakes that Greg makes without trying to think about how to continue the conversation. And so I can stop the editing and go, wait a second, Greg said that. I bet that's wrong. Ticka, ticka, tick. Yeah, that's wrong. But it's not just about calling each other out or making us right. I look at the Walk of Shame as being this opportunity to delve further into something, and you'll notice that my Walk of Shame's like, oh, our listener said this, and this is why this is wrong. Oh, but guess what else? And so suddenly you're like talking about rabbits and eggs and all sorts of stuff that's sort of tangentially related, and it becomes a segment in its own.
You definitely can. Sometimes it's just funny. Like, it's correct. Technically correct. The best sort of correct, sort of amusing one-liner thing. But then sometimes it can go quite deep. Or Dan does the bait and switch, which I find funny, where he's like, Greg, you said this thing. Blah, listener, blah, said you said this terrible thing.
Turns out you're right.
And then it's like 10 minutes in. I'm like, wait, I'm right. Hang on a minute. Am I right? I'm right. He goes, yes, you were right. So screw you, listener. I'm like, oh, fair enough. That's weird. But that just happened.
There are certain formats for jokes that we tend to revisit here and there, and trying to bait Greg into saying something wrong is one of my favorites.
So how long does it take to produce an episode? So how long do you guys record for? Like, your shows are normally well over an hour, but how long are you actually sitting in front of the mic?
I probably spend 3 or 4 hours just prepping my segments and writing. Well, most of the work is writing insults for the top tier patron people. Greg, I don't know, it's harder for you to sort of judge because you're sort of always reading articles, isn't it?
Yeah, so that's one of the I realize I don't read a lot of novels anymore. My life has become articles and stories and reading things online and papers and things. And so it all just, I can't, it's hard. I used to think, I don't do a lot of prep. And I realized that a lot of my life is prep. I'm putting things into the computer bank, and then I write notes into my phone, and then later on you go back and check it and go, oh yeah, that thing, and go find that thing again. And sometimes get rid of a lot of them. So it's hard for me to say, I don't sit down and go, right, for the next hour, I'm going to do this thing. It's a bit more spread across my week. In fact, sometimes months ahead, a story will come out that and it'll be updated, and then I'll go, okay, use that story now. So, yeah, it's a bit harder for me to say exactly how many hours.
Whereas I will sit down and write 2,000-word essays to read out on the podcast.
I do most of the interviews, so I organize the interviews, and that's just based on fun stuff that I want to talk to someone about. And that's the funny part of this podcast is, to begin with, I was like, hi, we do a little podcast. Please don't hate us, but, you know, would you like to talk to us? Well, now I'm like, ha, come on, be on a podcast or not. I don't care anymore. And it's not that we're too famous or big. It's like, I know people want to talk. People want to get their science out there, and they're really excited to someone wants to talk to them. It's only when they become famous do they start being like, no, I won't, you know, and they're probably trying to make money out of it. And that's fine. But I've experienced that a few times where someone's like, I am far too big for you now. Like, I've moved on to the mighty echelons I am now a medium fish in a medium pond. And it's quite funny, but that's fine because there's always up and comers. There are new scientists coming in. There are people who desperately want their disparate voices to be heard.
And they're the ones doing the really exciting science and the people that we want to highlight.
Exactly right, yeah. And they're the interesting people who are just super excited that you cared enough to send them an email.
Mm.
And a lot of times it's like, oh, I'd love to come on. Can I come on now? What are you doing now? You're like, no. Like, I need to organize all this. Like, it's great.
But then we'll get on Skype and I'll record Greg's end. We've tried the recording both ends and putting it together, but that was years ago when the internet in Australia sucked and all these pauses kept turning up in the wrong spot. It's like, you know what? We'll just do it this way because now every single episode has to be over Skype because somebody moved to the other side of the country.
Way to go, Greg.
That's true. 1/10 around the planet.
And so our Skype call will probably be a little bit over 2 hours long, but about 25 minutes of that will be us talking about Doctor Who.
So Chris Chibnall's awful. Sorry. Edit that out.
We'll get it's basically a warm-up exercise. We'll warm up our voices, we'll reconnect, and we'll get the energy of back and forthing happening. And then we're like, all right, let's get to it. And we've sort of just developed these bits of the podcast now. Like the intro, we used to waffle so much.
Yeah.
And we had to sit down and go, we keep waffling. We need to figure out how to start and end this frigging thing. And now we got it.
So the fact that it's an audio-only show, does that make it more difficult to convey certain topics or certain ideas? Have you shied away from some things because you would have needed a visual medium?
I love it. I love the challenge of explaining something that's really visual to an audio audience. Because at one point I bought to the podcast, I said, I learned all these wonderful sign language signs for scientific phenomenon. And people are learning faster, like certain concepts faster because of the language of sign language. And I was like, oh, now I have to explain to the audience what these are. Well, mass is you take these three fingers. And I had to work out in advance how I was going to explain these very, very visual things. And I love that. And it's extended to me creating these ridiculous metaphors. And I've gotten good enough where I'm listening to people that we're interviewing and going, oh, so it's kind of like when a baker is like, it takes a whole bunch of different types of flours and mixes them all together with and they're like, yeah, that's a really good analogy. So I love that part of it. It's my superpower.
It's like Doctor Who saying, think of a raspberry tart. No, it's nothing like a raspberry tart. It's nothing. Forget all that. So that's like, it's that sort of desperately trying to explain a hard concept in a way that people can't understand.
Yeah, totally. I did on the radio once. I was explaining vaccination and herd vaccination by telling the story about a tiger that had to stay out of the sun and knocking down trees and stuff. And the guy on the radio, Tim, was looking at me, and he's just baffled. He's like, why are you telling this?
It's, the audio format does make you have to consider what you're doing. And also working with your voice, obviously, how you speak and the interest you put into it and putting on silly voices. But that comes naturally, I think, to us, Dan.
Also laughing out loud at jokes. Listeners, you don't know this, but some of the things that I've been saying that have been quite funny, Carrington will like silently rock in his seat and wave his hands around, and he won't vocalize that laughter. It's not showing on the podcast. You sound stern.
You can bring it out when you bring the humor. No, I am on a lot of different podcasts, and some are edited, word I can't say, and some are not. And I try to be really nice to the person who has to cut a show that is going to be edited. And I'm always worried about crosstalk. So that's why. So I laugh silently in the background, but I have been laughing. Yes. Just cut that bit into earlier pieces.
Okay. It hasn't sounded that like put on, listeners. Like it seemed really sincere. So I don't know what you just heard then.
I got out of the show as well with the organization of the show is I suffer from a little bit of, I guess, mental illness, so depression, that sort of stuff. And so that's been sort of sometimes I don't want to do it. Like, I just don't want to do it. I don't have the energy. I don't want to get up and do it. And it's been really good to go, no, I have to do this. I have no choice to do this. I do have a choice. I can choose not to, but yeah. It
and
would be letting.
Sometimes you do. You're like, you text me like, I feel like shit today. Can we do it next weekend or sometime in the week? I'm
yes.
Like, yeah, sure.
Yeah. So and it moved it to other time. That's right. So, but it gives me that, okay, I've got to get this done now. I've got to adult up and I've got to just go and get this thing done. And invariably I start and go, I'm not feeling this. And by the end, I'm like, woohoo. It's like running. It's like doing exercise. You get everything moving. And for me, it's quite a panacea, or a cathartic, I guess. I don't know what the word is, but it's useful. So, that's been very good for me as well, to have to actually get off my ass and do things occasionally.
So is that what kept you guys motivated? Because like 10 years is a long time to do a podcast, and you guys have done it with a lot of enthusiasm and you're going stronger than ever. And so is that what's kept you motivated? Like, what keeps you guys at this? It's a remarkable achievement to have done as many episodes as you have and to still have enthusiasm for this.
Sheer bloodied mindedness, maybe?
Inertia.
Yeah. It's like, oh God, I guess. Look, there was a time when I moved to Perth and uprooted my entire life and moved over here, I was wondering if the podcast was over. That there was like, you know, is this going to peter out now? Are we going to die? And did I want it to? Like, was I trying to make something happen that, you know, that Dan would go, enough of this crap, we're done, you know? And I go, oh, well, that's not my problem. You know, that sort of thing of, well, I didn't do it, but it hasn't. And I'm glad it hasn't. So I guess there's been moments when you wonder if this is going to go on, but we seem to enjoy it. It's really, for me, it's also meeting up with my friend and chatting to my friend and having a conversation. And I'm very bad, whatever's in my head, I'm very bad at just, hey, come on over and we'll have a chat. I don't understand that. This, my brain architecture, come out and hang out with your mates. Why?
Why would I do that?
No, seriously. Why? What are we going to achieve? And they're like, no. We're just going to hang out together. And I'm like, what? What? Hang on, why? And I don't understand. I still don't get it. I understand people want to do it, but I don't understand why the hell you'd want to do it. It's something very, very weird for me.
So I've got to him into, hey, come create something amazing. Oh, something amazing. Oh, yes, I didn't know we were going to make something amazing.
Well, just create something. Like, yeah. And oh, it's like, come to a party. Even like parties, like, oh, what? Why would I go to a party? Oh, there'll be people there to talk to. That, like, oh, great. I'll go to that. Yes, I'll definitely. But I don't understand it. I will never understand it. I'll never grok it. I'll never feel it. So, but I know that's weird for me. So to hang out with a friend is really nice and I really enjoy it, but it's really good to have something we create together that is a thing that other people enjoy. And I really, so if anyone who's listening that I don't do that with, I'm really sorry. It's not that I dislike you. It's just, it's like I go, we have limited time. We need to do something with that time. And so creating theater shows or, And I love the time with my friends, but I also need to make something whilst I'm doing it.
Dan, what's kept you motivated 10 years in?
Or
is this the swan song? Is this you leaving? Greg, this is the way you find out.
It's tiring to do. It's still it's still just as much work, and yet I don't have that sort of honeymoon flush. And so there is definitely a sense of inertia to it. But the things I get out of it, as I mentioned before, is it feels like the one thing in my life that's like making humanity better. And also, there are over 1,000 people who tune in and love to listen to us, which is both gratifying, and it means that there's an audience for anything new that I come up with that I do get really enthused about. And I would hate to be like, podcast is over, and then 8 months' time go, oh, I wish I had an audience for my new thing. So I'm going to wait until I've got a new.
This entire show down to just the words you saying, podcast is over, and put that out.
Yes. Happy 10th birthday, motherfuckers. I'm out. Whoosh.
Mic drop.
Now, we should probably talk about the editing. We finish recording, and then Greg posts through the links to the stories he's done, and I've got links for the stories I've done. And then I've used a bunch of different programs. I used to use Audacity and then Twisted Wave, and then I got a proper audio guy to come and teach me a program called Reaper. And I use Reaper, and I've set up a bunch of hotkeys and clever bits and pieces, and I load up Greg's track and my track, and I can go through, and I can find an I can spot an from 2 minutes away, and I can click on one side of the drag the cursor, lift my finger off the button, and the is gone. So that job that I have to do like 300 times an episode becomes half a second of work rather than 3 seconds of work and three button clicks.
Which adds up over 2,000 ums.
Yeah.
When I've edited the podcast, I've learned that everyone ums differently. You can find, oh, that's your um. Oh, that's that person's um. I've actually seen how different people vocalize and you go, oh, you're very consistent, but across different people. It's really, really fun.
And Greg has stopped umming so much since he started editing the podcast. So
I have. Well, no, not so much. I felt I stopped umming because you mentioned stop umming years ago. What I've slowed down doing is having three thought processes in one sentence. So I'll start to speak and then I'll go, the thing about blah is, wait, no, the thing, how I want to explain that 42 ducks, a penguin, and Dan's like, God, and then so I have this kind of, and I can watch my brain get put it all together, but I'm speaking the thought process, and that's the thing I've learned or tried to stop as much as possible. I still do it, but I've learned
to spot it too. I could hear it, and I start, it goes, hang on, don't start editing this yet. Wait until where does this start? No, he's still trying to figure out how to start the sentence. We'll get there in a moment. There we go.
I want to hear about those ducks.
So that editing process tends to take probably 2 hours if it's just Greg and I. And if it's an interview, it can take 3.5 or 4 hours because scientists are not necessarily great public speakers. And so there's lots of – and I take a lot of care because my goal is for them to sound like they're super brilliant at the end, that they know exactly what they're talking about. Because I am very jealous of you because you occasionally boast about, we're not editing anything out. This is the show. And I'm like, oh, man, what a dream to just be able to drop it online. Girl Clumsy
lower
does that
your
too,
standards, Dan. Lower your standards.
But the problem is that when you're
freeing up a lot of time.
When you're talking about science, you want to present a certain level of overcompetency, especially from
your
scientists.
Chose the wrong subject, didn't you? Computers for the win.
Oh, I sure did. Because we've got to be right. I can't just go to Google. I've got to go to Google Scholar now. This stuff is dense.
two to three hours to edit a podcast?
Yep. I'm always on the lookout for little bits that don't fit in the podcast that I can drop at the end. And I've got a couple of things I can drop in for little music bits and pieces, the little stings that I wrote myself a decade ago.
I was going to ask you who wrote the theme song, your da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da thing.
That's me. That's me.
Have you ever thought about writing lyrics? Oh my God, I just said that to your theme tune. Have you ever thought about writing lyrics?
I was actually trying to copy the tune that I vaguely remembered from this cartoon show in grade 3, when I was like 8 years old. I remember a science show and it had this sort of synthy sort of feel. And I was like, oh, I want to get that feel. I have no idea what that original song was. And it's probably completely different to what our intro is.
Well, I wonder why was the theme song from that was written by Tim Wotherspoon, a friend of ours who's a musician. And he actually wrote that for me. I went and asked him and commissioned him to write that. And said, I just want a sciencey kind of sound that fits in with the main podcast, but not a copy. And he went off and thought, what does Greg like? He likes Doctor Who. He likes all this stuff. And he wrote that.
But I wasn't really much of a musician back there. I was sort of just playing around down the shallow end. And since then, I've written a bunch of proper songs and learned a lot more about making music. I'm still an amateur. But I listened back and I'm like, I'm really glad that sort of held up. The GarageBand is so easy to use.
It's compare it to a lot of podcasts when you realize that you're listening to the same, was it Kevin MacLeod music? The is it Kevin MacLeod? And he's the guy who writes all the royalty-free music, and you hear it everywhere. And if you've listened to a podcast that uses royalty-free music, you've probably listened to Kevin MacLeod's work. And he asks you to send money if you want to, and if you're making money off it, but it's all free. In Completech, I think it's .com or whatever it is, but I hear it everywhere now. I'm like, oh, I know that. These are all, and so it's very nice that we have a sting, a start of the podcast that is only ours, that you're not going to hear anywhere else. That's not, we were ahead of the game with making it a theme song. It was like a 2-minute, hey, here's a science song and we're doing, no one cares. Like everyone just bypasses it. We have a very fast, before people knew that you had to keep it under 15 seconds, we were keeping it under 15 seconds. It was always, we managed to luck into it, I think. Is that fair, Dan? That, it wasn't that, you didn't plan that, did you?
I'm probably a genius.
Yeah,
probably.
But years after we were doing the podcast, people were like, stop having these long theme songs. Just get in there and say it. They should just. It's got to a point now.
Or sing the entire show. Like, just, you know, commit.
or your podcast. Your intro should be your, like, welcome to the thing, and it's, and you have no song. Like, if you, I like a song. I like a show feeling of to it. I must admit, this is the start of something, and then here's the end of it, not just here's a conversation that we're having.
Can we expect Smart Enough to Know Better, the podcast, the musical?
We do have – the other good thing is that we can put together a little – if we've got a segment, I can do a little musical intro to the segment for Riddle Me This or Pimp My Time. Well, we didn't do one for Pimp My Time. We got – yes, we did.
But Crypto Zoo. And I love the fact – I remember one time and I was saying, hey, Dan, we need like a more spacey Crypto Zoo. And it's just – it's like, it'll pew, pew with lasers. And Dan's like, I'm not doing it. Well, no, you have to do it, Dan. And then the next time I listened to it, it was just the Crypto Zoo with me saying, pew, pew with lasers.
I forgot about that.
I got what I wanted. The dance went, nah, that's what you get.
Malicious compliance.
Nice. Okay, so you've got your show, you've done all these hours, you've edited it, you've got the final audio. How does that become a thing on my iPhone?
I've actually written scripts so that it does it automatically.
Ooh,
now.
Fancy computer, man.
If I uploaded and then needed to make a change, it would take me another 20 minutes to make that change. And so now it's all done pretty much automatically, where I could just run a bash script and it takes the file, the full size file that I've made and exported from Reaper, and then it renames it and compresses it and then sends it straight onto the server. And then I just jump onto the web and activate it or publish it, and we're ready to go. Luckily, I do a lot of web design. That's my job. And so making a website that presents a podcast turned out to be a thing that wasn't the struggly bit. And a lot of people now use podcast services, but mine's all home rolled.
I love the fact that our podcast, Smart Enough to Know Better, smartenough.com, sorry, is one of the most optimized.
Sorry?
Smartenough.org. Sorry.
Couldn't get smartenough.com.
Yeah, unfortunately not. Smartenough.org is one of the most optimized web pages in all of history, because Dan just uses it as the test bed for his clients, his actual web clients. So anything that needs to try and make it better. So we get like the bleeding edge web page that loads in 2 seconds flat. Dan's actually very good. I'll give him a lot of credit for you download podcasts and they're huge, and you download someone's hour podcast and it's 300 meg and you're like, what are you doing? And then Dan's got it compressed to a point that it's small, but there's no audio drop that you can detect, and so it's a small file but still an hour and a half long. I'm very impressed by that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And no one cares anymore, because like, I can download, if you're in America, we get all our information for free and it's super fast. But we don't live in America, we're Australians.
What?
And so it's,
what?
I know. So we
you
have
should
to,
have brought this up earlier in the show.
So we have to. So it. For some people, it can be a problem to download podcasts to their phone through their data plans and that sort of stuff. So it's becoming less of a problem now. But
I boosted up the quality just a smidge about a year ago.
Monster!
So it's gone up from like each episode was like I think about 16 meg, and now it's gone up to closer to 30.
But the reality is, well, I was mocking you guys earlier about the little technical glitches in the first show. Your audio quality has always sounded amazing, like remarkably good.
Can we talk to Castology about that? Can we get that on file?
Yes.
And tell Castology.
Yeah, it's our beef. Yeah. It's like gangs.
But you also have Canadians, so. And we're all lovely people.
Don't trust anyone who says that. Don't trust anyone. Anyone. I haven't mocked Canadians in over a year. That's a good point. I have to get back to that.
my first tech that I got is I got a podcaster kit. I think I spent like $200 and it came with a microphone, a little mixer and some free software. And then I had to buy another microphone. And that worked fine. But it's been interesting building up and learning a bit more about how you go about recording stuff properly, getting a proper mic and a mic guard. And Greg got his snowball thing for the podcast initially. This is the one that screwed the first episode up and I didn't let him use. until he was in a different room.
Still better.
So that's still got running strong, and I got a Rode podcast, like a proper USB mic. If we're doing it in person, I'll still get out the mixer and make sure that all the levels are right. And that, and most importantly, that it's being saved in two places.
Uh-huh.
We have never lost an episode. Mm. We did,
he said,
"Yeah, we lost it."
Daring.
We did record an intro, like a 12-minute intro, on the laptop mic instead of the good mic, but that was an episode where we were just interviewing some Canadian filmmaker, and the actual interview was fine. So, so that was probably the worst. Yeah, other than that first episode, where just
also in the last couple of months, the world's gone into a whole pandemic thing, and lots of podcasts are now changing things around. And what the thing I've learned and everyone is learning is it's how hilarious, because people are like, if it's not crystal clear, your podcast is garbage and you should all get out of our pool, basically. There was very much a snobber. I felt a bit snobby about it. People were like, if you're not in a $1 million recording studio at NY, you know, it's somewhere in New York, then you're just piddling in the pool, kids. But now everyone's doing it from their home with Zoom, and everyone's given up on that. Everyone's gone, no, that's fine. This is actually fine. Everything's fine. And because they have to, because they've realized they haven't got access to their amazing technology. Now, we're above talking on Zoom, but we're also not in a massive studio with sound baffles on walls. I'm hoping if we get one thing out of this horrible situation is that people will go, it actually doesn't matter that much. You don't have to be 100. You don't have 1,000,000%. You know, you can pull it back a bit and it's going
to
be fine.
Don't listen to Greg. Don't listen to him at all. Like, I work very hard to get the... I got a friend of mine called John Dagwell to come in and teach me about how to use various filters and stuff to clear up noise and to get rid of pops and stuff, and just to do that EQ stuff that's like dark magic. I don't know how you deal with that, Carrington, because you've done a lot of podcasts.
I speak into the microphone. It goes into the world.
Cool.
There is no step three.
Cool. All right.
That's it.
You see,
again, standards low. I don't know how many ways I can put these words into different orders.
Unlike a Canadian, we love quality and we, you know, we care about our product. That's all I have to say.
In Canada, we play a lot of hockey. We eat a lot of snow. We say a lot of sorry. This is what we do.
And moose. So, you have moose. You have these giant horses.
Like, that's a weird thing about Australia. Like, everybody in the world makes kind of gentle fun of Australia and that you live in a country of terror, that there's spiders and snakes and everything's going to kill you and everything's going to kill you.
And it's all true.
It's all true. And yet, as Canadians, we're used to saying, well, if you go out camping or hang out in a park, make sure that you put anything food-like in a bag and hoist it way up in a tree. Otherwise, a bear will eat it and then you. And that's how my country is.
Megafauna. We have no megafauna that will kill you.
And we're just used to that. We're like, oh, but that's just a giant bear. Don't worry about it. Spiders are scary.
Go to Yellowstone. I went to Yellowstone, which I know is not Canada. And the young man behind the counter, I'm like, I'm going to go for a daily hike. I'll be back sort of, you know, sundown. He's like, you got bear spray? Like, no. He's like, oh my God, please take my. He was really like scared for me. He was like, you have to have bear spray. And I thought it was like a drop bear joke, like evil koala joke. Of course, tell the Australian you need bear spray. And
you
then
need
so
bear spray.
And so because I wouldn't buy it because it was expensive, he was like, oh, and he took it off his belt and went, please, please take this, give it back to me tomorrow. And I was like, oh, you're serious. And so, and then I went out for a big walk and didn't see a bear. I did see a bison.
They saw you.
They saw me. But then again, I walked with two Americans from Utah who were carrying 45 handguns, 0.45 handguns, openly on their belts. So as they pointed out, your spray is just going to irritate them. My gun will stop them. Like, well, okay, fair enough.
Actually, Canadians, we're fans of bear bells and bear spray, of course. But you put a little bell on yourself and you make noise and the bears know you're there and everybody... That's the truth. You wear a bear bell.
Are you embarrassed to kill you?
I heard that it's good to know if a bear's in the area and that a black bear poop is like brown and stinky and a grizzly bear poop smells like capsicum and has little bells in it.
Little bells of little Canadians. That's just the country we live in. Anyway, it's been 10 years. You've been doing this amazing show. Been a fan from the beginning, but... Let's say you were sentenced by court order to do another 10 years of this. what will you hope to have accomplished? Do you have goals that you still haven't done? Do you just want to do more of the same? Do you envision the show changing? Like, what are your dream results for the next 10 years of the show?
I don't think I have enough energy to change it.
I would like it to get out to more people, I must admit. I think that we've been doing this thing and people sort of, I know that some people in our friendship groups, I don't know, deride it. My thing has never been, I don't do shows or podcasts for my friendship group. I don't, if you want to listen to it, that's fine. If you don't, that's fine too. It's not what the audience should be, everyone else, not the people who happen to be around you. I would like it to be more out there. I get frustrated that it's not bigger than it is because we're not famous. And sometimes I get frustrated that we started earlier and it never got bigger than it is. But on the other hand, we didn't push it. And also, podcasts are such a niche thing. We're not like cool YouTubers or people on Twitch or doing, hey, welcome to my thing. I'm going to play a game. And they get a million people watching. I get frustrated by that sometimes. So I would like more people to see it. But
it is
so
very
sane.
Frustrating when David Tennant's like, oh, I just had the inkling to have a podcast. Oh, yeah. We've got 10,000 listeners. Great. It's like, you, Doctor Who.
Yeah. Oh, John Krasinski goes, I'm going to talk on a YouTube channel and do some good news and sell it for $1 million 3 months later, or probably more than $1 million. And I get frustrated by that of you're turning fame into fame. Here's a famous person. They do a thing that's not that clever, and then they sell it for a lot of money. Or they use it as a vehicle. Now, we're just trying to do the same thing, I guess. So this is me being bitter.
Well, but the thing is, we want to boost up unheard voices in science.
Yes.
I love trying to find podcasts that are like these little podcasts of people who are talented and brilliant but just don't get to be on the Wolf Nuts Network or whatever.
Yeah. And I get annoyed. I've been told by some people, oh, well, you're just two white dudes. You need to get out of the way and let the people of color and all the women get it. And you're just filling up space. And you're like, ah, yes, that's true, I guess. But also, we also have something to offer, and mm-hmm. we're trying to work with people. And I don't think there's a pie that we can all. There's only so many slices of pie, and you're taking slices of pie from someone else. It's a bit. Hey, I don't know. I get frustrated with the concept of you're male, pale, and stale. Like, get out of the way. Let the cool kids through.
I haven't heard any of this.
Oh, okay. And I get annoyed by that concept a little bit. You kind of go, we have a place and we have somewhere and we're happy to change and we're happy to. I'm very happy to work with more female people and more people of color and people from all walks of life because I just want to talk science.
And you can't lift someone up onto the mountain if you're not up on the mountain.
That's right, and we are a platform. That's a very good point, Dan, that we want to share our platform. We've created a platform from 10 years, but well before other people were creating platforms, well before. Not the first, but we're in the first percentile, like quartile sort of thing. We're very early on, and we are here to promote people. We are absolutely here to promote people. We're not making a lot of money out of this. Yeah, we're here as a platform, and I would hate for people to see our platform as somehow stopping their voice. That's not what it was designed for. It's to promote science and to get people, scientists' voices out there. So
speaking of which, though, you've got 10 years of essentially legacy out there. But as you mentioned before, the thing about science is it advances, it changes. There's new exciting things. Does that bother you at all that maybe there's episodes from 5 years ago, 8 years ago that now have incorrect information that you'll forget? This do you feel an impetus to go back and correct things now, or you just say, hey, science marches on, don't worry about it?
It's more so that in the next two episodes one of our audience members will have told us that we screwed up. So if anyone's going through all of them, well, I get these emails going, hey, this is my first time I've written into the Walk of Shame. I'm going through the archive. Here's a mistake you made 6 years ago. And then like a day later, it'd be like, oh, sorry, ignore that last email. I just realized that you addressed that in the subsequent Walk of Shame.
We know, for me personally, don't go back. Never look back. Just like Lot's wife. Just like cool dudes and explosions, never look back and keep marching forwards blindly. No. You change how you do it, but no, you don't go back and change what you have. And you have to live with it. If someone calls you out on it because you said something dumb or you said something offensive or whatever.
Wait,
you,
something done singular? I can't imagine.
Yeah, you own it and you go, did I say that? Oh my God, I did. See, I'm sorry about that. Here's what I think now about that thing. Or here's how I'm thinking about it now. And thank you for bringing it up. And I appreciate your time. And I'm sorry if it caused you offense or pain. And yeah, I'll try and do better in the future. Cool.
We've had almost none of that in a decade. Like we've never been, no one's ever tried to cancel Smart Enough to Know Better.
No. Not yet. In fact, I mean, I'm going to big note ourselves. We've had people contact us saying thank you for putting certain people on and people voices you don't hear and just chatting to people about that thing. For example, I had a whole issue about in Wild Wonders Why talking about the price of victory and talked to a lot of people from different walks of life. And then people emailed me going, oh my goodness, I never thought I'd hear about these sort of people on your podcast. And you're like, well, you can hear from everyone on our podcast. That's what the podcast is for. If you've got something interesting to say, I'm interested to talk to you. So it does make a difference what you are, how you identify. I just want to talk to you about it. Because then I learn.
Almost like a scientist.
Well, almost, yeah. Or just, look, just as a nosy Parker.
Another word for scientist.
Just as someone who goes, I am interested in learning, and I don't know about this thing that you are or you identify as. I don't know. The answer is, in the past, I would have gone, well, that's just rubbish. Now I go, I actually don't know. I have no dog in the fight, so I will let you talk. And that's the powerful thing about being considered one of the most powerful people in the world as a white male, is people kind of go, you can't hurt me. Like,
We're bulletproof.
We're bulletproof. People kind of go, you're a terrible dude. You're like, yeah, whatever. I have all the power, so keep talking. It's fine. Now, that can be a negative thing. You can be negative about that. You can also say, well, sling your slings and arrows at me. It's fine because you can't actually – I still have all the money and all the power, and I want to talk to you about this thing. So I don't understand why people – now we talk about white fragility and also – we're going down a weird place here. But as in, I have nothing to prove anymore. So I just go, I'll just listen to you. And sometimes I listen to someone and say – well, that's just garbage in the back of my head. And sometimes I say,
and then Dan edits that part out. Yeah,
no. As in, I do a podcast where I'm like, that doesn't sound. That seems weird to me. But then sometimes I go, oh, I've learned something, and that's fine. But I don't feel the urge to go, here's my opinion about this thing I don't get. So just be kind, everyone. For God's sakes,
just be kind.
Just shut up and be kind. Like it's okay. There's no such thing as thought crime. You can think in your head, what a Dak Carrington Vanston. What a dickhead. But don't say it out loud on a microphone.
Yeah, it's like you just don't say it out loud, Dan, and then everyone's fine.
I'm quietly sitting. I don't – well, I'm like
– Let's pick on Dan.
I love that.
My favorite part of the show. Let's talk about dinosaur feathers.
Someone once said to me, oh, you guys – this is a while ago now, though. They emailed me going, oh, you guys don't seem to like each other. And I was
really?
Oh, no. We're good friends.
Well, people get the exact opposite impression.
And we can give each other crap. And
right. Like good friends do.
Like good friends do. But now but we've also learned to go, hey, that was too far. Like as in I felt that maybe felt a bit personal. And then we've also learned to say, not on the podcast, and you go, oh, cool, I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean that wasn't what I meant. And then you talk and you go, cool, that's fine. I won't do that again. And that's strange enough, growing up and being adults.
Mm. And you also make sure there's lots of sincere compliments where you're like, oh, I love that thing you did. That was brilliant. Like, yeah. If it's an episode where Greg's like, aha, dinosaur feathers, you fool. And like, as soon as it stops recording, you go, oh, that dinosaur thing was great. I was like, yeah, I had a really good time.
Yeah. And we play characters. Our characters are not us, though they're pretty close to us. We play.
This was a question versions. I was about to ask you, actually. How much of the show is the real Gregoire and real mechanical Dan Beeston, and how much is just roles you're playing for the show? Like, is it a persona, or is it just if I hung out with you guys in a pub, is it still you?
I don't care that dinosaurs have feathers or not.
Shocking reveal in the 200.
Now I will still play that up if we're at the pub, but yeah. Deep in my heart, I don't give a shit.
What are the odds of this park making the show?
the secret behind the only for the Patreons. That's what it is. I think Gregoire is close to who I am, but emphasized. Gregoire is Greg on meth, I guess, and and science meth, and everything blown to 11, I think. So I get much more excited. I get much more big. But as people who know me, I can get pretty in the real world, get pretty excited by conversations. And I mean, Dan and I recently, when we were chatting about this conversation about setting this up. And I think at the end of the conversation, I went, oh, sorry, Dan, I've been blethering on for like 5 minutes. Like, blah, 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 blah. And Dan went, it's all right. I like talking to you. It's fine. I've just got to go. And it was one of those moments of, oh, so that is a real version of ourselves coming out in a real conversation. Yes, I do. I lean into it. I get angrier about things on the podcast. Whatever I'm feeling inside, I allow to come to the fore a lot more. So excitement, anger, interest, whatever it is, I play that up. I don't pull back. If you try to be that way in real life, you probably get put away. you come across as a bit of a lunatic. On a podcast, you come across as a character.
Yeah, I'm a much worse human being on the podcast.
Yes, like, yes, he is.
I almost never swear. The only time I swear is on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
You save it all up for the show.
Yeah, and I'm much more of a misogynist on the podcast. I'm much more intentionally obtuse and naive on the podcast because I like to play the idiot so that I can it's almost like I'm the Jake Peralta of the episode, is that I can start as the childish idiot and every episode I can have my growth of, oh, I've learned something now. And sometimes I already knew everything that was happening, but it's nice to go from in a particular thing. It's really important to start from that point of, let's pretend I knew nothing and listen to everything just in case I missed something I thought I knew.
Science, Peralta, comedy, and ignorance.
If you're Jake Peralta, does that make me Charles or Amy?
In this situation, you might have to be Holt.
Am I Holt?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's pretty good. I like being
Holt.
Because you have good. To...
Or Terry.
When we started out, we were both supposed to be two idiots, but you now tend to come across as the slightly better red idiot.
Yes, that's fair enough.
That's what you're looking for, slightly better red.
If I'm sitting there going, oh, you know those glowy rocks. If I'm sitting there going, oh, you know those glowy rocks, and you're going... Uranium 268 and uranium 265. It's like, yeah, the numbers. Yeah, thank you for the numbers.
Yeah. Okay. I'll be Holt. That's great. I'm happy to be Holt. That's a great character. Thank you.
Who wouldn't be? Of course. Okay, so to wrap things up a little bit here, if you guys were talking about the difference between you and your characters on the show and what you've learned and what you've done, if you could go back in time to before the show started, about to do episode one, what advice would you give to yourselves about the podcast? Because would you do things differently? Do you have regrets? What would you tell yourself to do, or would you just let it happen?
The idea of building up this podcast again, being ahead of me rather than behind me, makes me want to just go, oh, no, fuck that. Fuck Greg. I'm out.
I would tell myself to calm down a bit. It's not a competition. To begin with, there was a lot more competition between Dan and I, Phil. Maybe it was just on my part. Now there's a lot less competition. And
because you won, or?
Yes, I crushed him underfoot.
Actually, no, we had a proper competition in the first
year. Yeah, you did have a proper
And he lost.
Point.
So,
what is that? Yes.
It's true. And just roll with it. On that side, on the Dan and I level, just calm down, Greg. It's not a competition, and just enjoy it. Play the characters. Once we worked out this wasn't real, this was like a character thing. So that's my first advice to myself. The other one is, to myself, I would say, if you want to make this into something, lean into it. It was almost, once again, like, I didn't know that you could be a PhD in astrophysics or whatever. back in the day. And nowadays I look at other people who have made entire lives, like the Vlog Brothers, like the Nerd Fighters, John Green and Hank Green. And that's the thing. All these people who are creating these YouTube/ podcasting empires, and they're amazing. Don't get me wrong. They're absolutely incredible. And I think to myself, if I'd only known that was something that could have been done, it might have been something that I would have said, hey, maybe you should lean into that. You want to be a science communicator. You're going to want to be a science communicator in the future. This is something you're really passionate about. Then go be one. Don't work for someone else and get paid by someone else. Create this empire yourself and be young and sexy and youngish and sexy-ish and create something really big and exciting if that's what you want to do. But know that you can do it, because now I feel – that other people have absolutely colonized these areas, and you have to carve out these niches, which you can do, but it's a lot more work now. Where we were ahead of the game, and if we wanted to, we could have maybe made it something, we could make it into a job. And 10 years ago, I would have laughed at myself that was possible. Now I'm like, no, you can do this. It's possible. It could have been possible to do it. It would just take a lot of work now. And I'm not too sure if I have the energy now to do that. where 10 years ago I might have.
I probably would have just told Greg, don't plug in that USB mic. It's going to fuck up the first episode. It's going to be a nightmare.
So. I love the idea. It's like the TARDIS voice, woo, woo. Dan just bursts in. Greg, don't plug in the USB thing. And then that disappears. I'm like, oh my God, why? It's like, can't explain. I have to go. And then we just for years, we just think it's going to like end the world or something weird's going to happen. It's just like, oh my God, we have to hide it away and bury it in concrete at the bottom of the Pacific Ocean. Dan's like sitting there looking at himself. God, I got old. I got so old. I got so old.
Can't believe you used my TARDIS for this.
But I thought that my painting was getting old. I thought Greg was getting old instead of me. I don't look old.
It's all very complicated. Just accept it. Lean into the age. As a final question, I was going to ask you guys if you are proud of what you've done. But instead, I'm just going to tell you that you should be. I have been a listener and a fan from day one. I think you guys have accomplished and created an amazing thing. I think it is one of the best podcasts that's ever existed, and I do actually hope you get sentenced to doing 10 more years of it, because I would listen to every one of them. I have learned a ton. So on behalf of your listeners and your fans, of which I am one and proud to be one, I really cherish your show, and I think you've given voice to a lot of people who might not have had one. I think you've taught me and other people a lot of things I might not have learned, and that is an incredible difference. Like, you're science communicators in the best sense. And I love the heck out of you guys, and I love the heck of the show. And I hope the judge sentences you to life, is what I'm saying. You deserve it. You deserve it, Dan and Greg. And I'm a huge fan of the show, and thank you so much for having me on.
I think got colon cancer. There's so much smoke up my ass all of a sudden.
My blood sugar level's gone to the diabetes for all. No, look, thank you very much. That is very kind, and we deserve every one of those accolades.
Yes, you did.
Yes, and we want a speech like that from every single one of our listeners.
Yes, right in now, you
leeches, yes.
I think we should just cut that at the end and just put this in the last bit.
No, I still think you should cut out everything on the entire show except and say the show is over.
No, we're done. We're out.
Show is ended.
Okay. Speaking of the show being over, you have been listening to Dan at smartenough.org.
Also, Greg at smartenough.org.
You can get involved in any of our buttons down at the button factory on smartenough.org. Not smartenough.com, Greg.
No, sorry.
Smartenough.org.
I thought you would have edited that out, but obviously you're not. Thanks.
Well, now I can't, I guess. So there'll be show notes in there. Big thank you to Carrington. Thank you so much for coming on. Big C.
You are most welcome.
You can hear Carrington at, where are you, monsterfeet.com?
Monsterfeet.com, and on Twitter, just at Carrington.
It must be nice to have a cool...
To be so old that I was on Twitter early, yes.
It's, British it's Duke's name.
It never fits in those print your name here spots, so I get a lot of mail addressed to Carrington. So, 9 letters. Give kids 9 letters at most.
I always love it because the Carrington event, of course, was the large electromagnetic event that would have wiped out civilization if civilization had electronics. And
it felt like it.
And near where I used to live, there used to be a stately manor called the Carrington. And every time I walked past and go, oh, named after my good friend, Canadian Carrington Benson podcaster, obviously.
I've always wanted to be a stately manor.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to splice in all of our Patreon information right here. If you would like to support us, you can tell everybody.
That's the best part. Just say, hey, there's this podcast that's been around for 10 years. It's like 10 years of podcasts.
So, yep. They're so up to speed now.
They know what they
they've got inertia. They've got inertia.
They very rarely fall at the first hurdle. It's rare. It's super rare. We think that one of them probably fell over years ago and his leg never quite healed properly, and he probably should have been shot by the race marshals.
He's got the heart of a champion.
Oh, yeah, as it distended and like just swelling into his rib cage. You should probably see a cardiologist about that too. But, good Lord.
We did steal the heart of a champion and give it to him. He needed a new heart. And then, what was that champion going to do with it?
Nothing at all. Nothing. Not, well, rubbish.
If you would like to support us even more than that, you can go to the website and buy a shirt or some shirts.
There are two good. Can I just point out the shirts? You have the one with our beautiful logo, which is a beautiful shirt. But then there's another one, which is much more. It's a comedy blimp, but it's got things on it and squids and aliens, and it's madness. And when people look at it, they'll say, "Yes, I must breed with this person who wears this shirt." I guarantee that.
Oh, some people don't want that.
What don't want to be bred with?
Well, they don't want people to like that. They don't want that to pop up on every single person's radar. They want to be a bit more. They want to be able to control that a bit more.
Well, then you have the other shirt, which is our stylish logo, which is either Greg and Dan looking down a cannon about to get blown away, or Greg and Dan looking in a spotlight. It's up to you.
Picture of Greg and Dan will take the edge off the horniness of others.
Absolutely. We can attest to that.
Yes. If you would like to drop a little bit of money in a PayPal account, you can do that in our tip jar, just like Carletta did. Carletta dropped $20 in there. That's more than just bread and butter money.
That's insane. That's real money. You could get a whole Coles or Woolworths. I'm brand agnostic. Chook, and you could easily feed a family of
chicken eaters.
That's right. And you could as you're eating, you go, "Take that, you dinosaur son of a bitch." That's why I eat chicken.
Or if you would like to support us every single month, you can be a patron. So you can click on the Patreon button on the website and you can give us a little bit of money.
Yeah.
You can give us $2 a month. Yeah. And that's a thing. You could give us $5 a month, and it means that we read your name out on the podcast in thanks.
And also it makes you a Comedy Blimp crew member. So you can tell everyone that whilst Greg and Dan are lording it up, drinking champagne from flutes, I guess. I mean, actual flutes. Like, that's how I'm not a very good drinker. I sort of... I also can't play a flute, pretend to play a flute. But anyway...
Not with that much alcohol in your system.
You can definitely swab a deck or pretend to. Yes, for $2 a month. It's amazing.
Five.
This is the five one. $2 a month, you can wave at us from the ground.
Yeah, you can wave at us from the ground. So,
which is only like 3 inches taller than the blimp, because it's in bad repair.
It's in disrepair.
It's a sick blimp.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't get that high at its best.
No, it's true.
Okay,
after 10 years, and we don't use helium, it's getting hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
It's mostly nitrogen.
Right? Yeah, which is actually quite heavy.
It's so dense. It makes it hard.
It's a dense gas.
Those turbines are really working overtime.
We have to work 20 times harder to make it fly, and that's how much we care.
Well, I would like to thank those people now. Thank you very much to Steve E, A.V. Greenbury, Grenier Maguire, Phil Holland, Gary Heather, Morden O'Hare, Ilana Mitchell, Elizabeth Yunkin, Matthew Toy, Lindsay Jenkinson, Matt Ewers, Andrew Potts, and Andrew Whitehurst.
Woo-hoo. Thank you very much.
You notice there's a name missing off that list?
Michael Barnes. Michael Barnes.
Michael
Barnes. We finally offended Michael Barnes too much, have
Michael
we?
Michael
finally...
Barnes has decided to go for the custom amount this month.
Oh, dear. Oh, there you go. Fair enough.
How much do we charge people to be abused by me in the top tier?
Well, if you are in a person who has a very strong self-esteem and money they want to give us, then you can, of course, pay $15. That means Dan will insult you and you will laugh off the insults. Ha, 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 because you're such a strong person.
So, well,
has he given us $15?
Michael Barnes has given us $14.50.
Does that mean he gets to insult you for 50 cents?
He doesn't get anything.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a custom amount. We didn't promise anything at that amount. That's his own custom tier.
You should go back and bleep out his name then, because he didn't give us $5.
Or
you should reverberate his name so it goes, "Michael Barnes, Michael Barnes, Michael," and then just 2.5 times. That's not right.
And 9/10.
You have to do. You have to have some sort of reverb on it. There's some math there somewhere, I'm sure.
9/10? Yeah, sure. 9/10.
Yeah, sure. Sounds good to me.
Okay. But in honor of our host, Carrington, who does the Infocom text adventure podcast, Eaten by a Gru. I've done something very special for the top tier patrons.
Ooh, exciting.
You are standing in an open field west of a white comedy blimp with a boarded front door. There is a mailbox here.
Go north.
Exits are to the east.
Okay. Go east.
You move to enter the blimp, but are confronted by a boarded up door. There is a mailbox here.
Open a mailbox.
You open up the mailbox. The leaflet inside reads, "Welcome to the Smart Enough to Know Better Comedy Blimp Experience, sponsored by Al Batson Industries." The blimp lies to the east.
Close mailbox.
You close the mailbox.
Open door.
You move to enter the blimp, but are confronted by a boarded up door.
Remove boards.
You grab the boards on the door. You pull with all your might. The boards are solidly affixed to the door. Thankfully, the door itself has all the structural integrity of a blancmange, and the entire frame pulls free, leaving a ragged hole for you to pass through.
Enter door.
You move into the blimp lobby. Instantly, you are overwhelmed by a wretched stench of decay. Through your watering eyes, you see a strange figure.
Look, figure.
Looking closely, you see the telltale, distorted thumbs of Tom Seary.
Talk, Tom.
His thick and ridiculous accent prevents you from understanding anything he says. Exits are east into the bar and west to the outside of the blimp.
Go east.
You step into the blimp bar. In the dim, dusty light, you can see small tables dotted about. As you step forward, your feet stick loosely to the carpet. Your disgust is slightly distracted when you reflect that Vandervoort's forces are at play here. You can see an unmanned bar, a table with Mitchell Keeter sitting at it.
Go to table. Go table. Sorry.
I do not understand go table.
Sit table.
There is no seat for you.
Talk. Who was it again? Talk. Damn it. Look room.
You can see an unmanned bar, a table with Mitchell Keeter sitting at it.
Talk, Mitchell.
He mumbles to himself, something about people never pronouncing his name correctly. You can see he's holding a small, fragile Dustin in his hand.
Look, Dustin.
It is small and fragile.
Take Dustin.
You snatch at the Dustin but fumble it. The Dustin fall on the floor.
Oh, that's...
It is broken into many valueless pieces.
Go to bar, or go bar.
The bar is unmanned. Looking closely, you see the shelves are empty, but for a simple note.
Look note.
The note reads simply, I O U, and is signed Dan J J J J J J. The J's continue for some time. Exits are west to the lobby and east to the blimp engines.
Exit east.
You step from the dim light of the bar into the claustrophobic tunnels of the comedy blimp. It is dark. You have wandered into the path of a lurking Steve Gruert. Steve Gruert likes the dark. You have died.
You
have attained the rank of Scott Driscoll out of a possible total of Eric Wilson. Would you like to play again?
No.
Correct. So thank you to all of our top tier patrons.
I had no idea. Listeners, I honestly had no idea what Dan was doing then. He just started and he starts speaking and he just looks in the camera and in a meaningful way. And I realize I'm not getting out of this one. I just have to work it out.
This was one of the most fun ones I've done, actually.
That was very good, Dan. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
And if you want to be insulted in an interesting way, of course, you can become a $15 patron as well on Patreon. And you can find us and Patreon us and pay $15 and it's great. And Dan will do something as interesting, probably even 10 times better next time.
It'll never be as good as that again.
Oh, no. It'll be more cunning and more... You'll wake up at night going, how did he do this?
Don't put this at my feet. This is 10 years in. Aren't these supposed to be my like quiet silver years?
No. There's 10 years. Now you're like powerful and you're a silver fox. You're like, look at me. I'm like a old man of like old man Wolverine of podcast.
Well, Gregoire, happy birthday.
Happy birthday to you, Dan. Yes. And this is not the end of the 10-year anniversary. We have plans in the future, back when we can all meet up and things. There are things boiling in the background, which I won't say too much about, but hopefully we will get something maybe live-ish.
Stuff boiling in the background? A fever in the background?
Yeah.
A dry cough of entertainment wafting over the landscape?
Oh, that sounds catchy.
And as we always like to say,
you are technically correct, the best kind of correct.
Yay!
Ultimate goodie!
There we go. That's a bit nicer. All right, now.
You look all confused.
This is how I start all my Skype calls.
What is glowing box? Where is voice?
It's every time I look at a picture of myself and I'm like, oh no, that's not right. I gotta sort that out.
Maybe it is still standing desk and you're just shrinking.
That's right. Well, it's look. We're all
no. He'd have to be growing.
He'd have to be growing, yeah, wouldn't he? Look,
yeah,
at him.
He'd have to be getting bigger, like Alice in Wonderland.
A thing my brain does. It doesn't happen ever so often, but some days I
or
wake
getting
up.
Getting further away?
Yes. Cows. There's some days I wake up and I get out of bed and I have this. And it probably means I'm having a stroke, by the way. I understand this is probably not a good thing, but I get out of bed and I walk towards the cupboard to change my clothes. And my brain says, we are huge. Not fat. My brain says very clearly, I put my hand out and I get this feeling like to grab something. My brain goes, oh my God, my arm is like hundreds of meters long. And I get this intense feeling of being a giant. And for a couple of seconds, I'm like, oh my God, I really do have a moment where I'm like, I'm huge. I'm so tall. And like I have this feeling that the universe has got bigger and everything got sized up. But my brain's gone, you're much, much bigger. And then I have to use, it's a really kind of spooky feeling of, my God, my hand's like 200 meters long. And then later on, I think to myself, wait, if that's true, my legs would have collapsed. Unless gravity, the constant of gravity had changed, you couldn't be that much taller. I couldn't be a kilometer tall because my bones would collapse under the pressure, like because of the, and it takes a scientific knowledge to convince me that I'm not super tall and the universe hasn't got super big. It's such a weird thing. It's happened more than once.
So really, your knowledge of science is keeping you back from a superhero origin story. You look like a stretchy dude if you would just let it happen, man. Well, have you not read a comic book?
But in the land where everyone is giants is another giant king. I think the answer is
yes.
No.
Your pointy head. Yeah, totally.
Would I just say, hello, I'm giant man? They would say, yes, Greg, we're all giant men. Even the women. They're all giant women. Everyone's giant, Greg.
No.
You're sleeping in and everyone was giants.
You're missing a trick here. Because everyone else just thinks they're normal sized still. You're the only one with the state of perception to go, we're all giants. And that's going to give you, that's going to prime you for success.
So hang on. So then I put on a costume. I run into a giant bank where giant bank robbers are robbing the giant vaults. And I say, we're all giants now. And they're like, bang, bang, bang. I'm like, ha, 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 oh, God.
You shouldn't have told them they were giants. They didn't recognize it yet.
I just realized. You'd say, we're all giants. And they're like, oh, no! And their head explodes. And I go, ha, 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 I killed you with my knowledge.
So it's a super villain origin story. Okay.
That's Gnosticism, by the way. What we just described is Gnosticism. As in having unknown knowledge of the universe that blows people's brains. There we go.
I wonder if that's some sort of synesthesia. What's the sense of being
prior reception? I think it's prior reception. The fact you know where your hand is at all times. I think it's something in my brain's gone, oh my God, it just hasn't woken up.
So maybe it's
prio-synesthesia. I think my hand is the color blue.
You kind of, or the sensation of yourself is passing through a different sensation or sense or something.
Yeah, possible.
Or it's a stroke. I love it. It's probably a stroke. It's
a stroke. Yeah.
So Hans Island is this little tiny place that both Canada and Greenland think is theirs. And it's never been mapped such that anybody's 100% sure who it is. Way up north, nobody really cares about the place. Mm. So when we show up, we will claim it, put up our flag, and then we leave some Canadian whiskey for the people from Greenland, and then we'll leave. And then people from Greenland will come over, they will take down our flag, they will put up their flag, and they leave us some other drink. And it's called the Whiskey War. So we've been technically at war with like Denmark for... ever. Yeah, but it's like the way Canada does it. We're like, oh, we'll just leave you some alcohol and put up a flag, and then you do it, and we just go back and forth forever. It's this little like, it's in the middle of this little straight, little tiny island.
That's super charming.
If China's taught us anything, putting a base on weird islands in the middle of oceans is a good way of projecting power. So, yes. You know, it's like all these, suddenly it was like, oh, these hilarious little islands no one cares about. We've been having this fight for years, And then China's like, you know, we can just put an air base on it and run everything. Like, oh no. What have we done? We haven't thought this through. We did not think this through.
Yeah, you don't want either Iceland or Canada to turn up to that little strait and find like this Chinese alcohol. You're like, oh no.
Oh no.
Oh no.
All these penguins saying, are we a joke to you?
Well, yeah. Have you seen a penguin? Yes.
I always knew I'd be replaced, but I didn't think I'd be replaced when Dan was replaced. That's weird.
Speaking of making moves on territory.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm just in it for the whiskey.
Yeah.
We might have to record that later.
I remember you saying like the hardest part is writing those insults. It takes like more effort.
It's a lot of joke writing.
Well, it's one joke that you hammer home many times.
Hey.
Harsh but fair.
It's not fair at all. It's completely unresearched.
So you're probably going to do better than me, and Dan's going to replace me very quickly with Carrington Vanston. Yeah. Oh, we should have Joel Gilmore replacing Dan and Carrington Vanston replacing Greg.
Oh, smart. We've got around the judges' 10-year... thing.
That's right. We can franchise it out and be even smart enough to know better.
So this is like that. This is like the evil genie that Carrington asks and says, "I want the podcast to go for another 10 years. Of course, your wish is granted. You are now the host."
Yes.
Oh God.
I like the idea of you guys franchising, though. You could have a whole bunch of very similar things. It'd be Greg Waugh and Dan Beeston were small enough to grow bigger, were smart enough to taste bitter, strong enough to churn butter, have gone long enough to cause blisters. Greg Waugh and Dan Beeston are sharp enough to not bother. You could just like franchise the heck out of this. I like it.
I mean, I don't care to talk about numbers, but it's really percentages of like, where does your tax go? And people go, bloody immigrants or whatever they complain about. It's like, well, here's where the actual money goes. Here's where your money goes.
Oh my God, half my tax goes to immigrants. I mean, I'm paying them for sex. Thank you very much. I'm here all week, and except for Thursday when I get cancelled.
That's okay. Sex work is an honourable profession. That's fine.
Not when they're trafficked into the.
Oh, look. That's you're making it worse. But it's not. The joke doesn't have to. The joke is. Hang on. Is the joke funnier because they're trafficked, or is it just you're an awful person?
I'm just a realist. Like, there's this very pie in the sky. There's the college girl who's completely in charge, paying off her tuition and stuff. Mm. But the fact of the matter is that 80% of these people are suffering.
Are they?
What they are, if I'm doing it right.
You have to pay more.
I have to pay more for that.
The lap dancers.
I don't want to have to put this up to the credits. I can't put this up to the credits. There are some things that make me look bad, and there are some things that make me look like a monster.
That's true. You want this just to be kept on your computer, and when you die, like your great-grandchildren discover it, and out of context, they just think you're like Hitler.
Perfect. That's what I'll name the file.
The Hitler file.
Yeah, there's only one joke in there that you didn't hit.
Mm.
If you tried to talk to him again, to Mitchell again, he mumbles something in a language you don't understand. You assume it's one of those Slavic ones that won't be missed when it dies out.
Harsh.
Yeah. Harsh but unfair.
That's right. That's the podcast way.
All right, I gotta go.
Yes, okay, cool.
I still have 30 minutes of Frozen 2 to watch.
Hey, Dan, just let it go. That's the line from the first one.
It's not great.
The second one?
Yeah.
I've never seen it, so I don't.
I'm watching it, and I'm like, how are people getting paid to tell stories as bad as this? This is garbage.
But the first one is insanely good, and for a Disney thing, and then... I guess, how do you live up to that, though?
It's not even living up to that. This is a bad story.
People were super angry because Elsa didn't turn out to be gay or something, like openly gay. A lot of people were like, she needed to be like married to a woman at some point. And I was like, I guess, because the fan fiction was like, oh, she's obviously, it's a story for being gay, not a story about magical power. So therefore, that was their thought process, which you can read that into it, I but guess. Some text becomes text. You know what I mean? Like
The only other woman that she has a relationship with is a sister. So it's a lesbian incest.
Yes.
Message, if any message at all.
Well, she was a woman pretend, like, no longer, you know, they're saying she no longer wants to hide what she is. She's going to just be what she wants and be fabulous and have a beautiful, you know, and that's why she's gay. And I'm like, look, that's, you incest. Can read that into it. You could read that into it. There was a man who shagged a reindeer.
No.
Not a very close. A reindeer?
Oh,
him.
Oh, yeah, he liked the reindeer.
They were friends.
They were homies. Yes.
Ah, right.
Christoph is not fucking the reindeer, Craig.
I know. I'm not too sure.
What are these people on the internet doing? It's a kids movie.
That's a different one. That's just my own weird idea. But also, he was going
to
take
her. The problem with Elsa being a lesbian is that your tongue will get stuck to it. If the tongue will get stuck on.
Also, can't put that at the end of the podcast. You can't.
That's the only reason I said it.
So what we should need to do, we need to mate Trudeau with Ardern, the New Zealand Prime Minister, and have amazing, attractive, competent
little super minis,
compassionate prime ministers that we just send around the world.
And that's how the Antichrist was born.
One day Canada will take over the world and you'll all be sorry.
Is it...
I love that. That's a very good joke.